I have baths because it's the only time my dog leaves me alone. Because she's scared of the bath. So
I don't drive her time right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, it's the only place it's I can go where I don't hear the like.
That's the best start of the show ever. It started off, I only take baths because it's when my dog leaves me alone.
Yeah, she won't leave me alone. She won't follow me into the bathroom.
Put candles around your chest?
No, I don't put candles. I just read and mostly message you guys.
That's
talk about Adam Driver being shirtless.
Is it the bubble bombs? No, what are they?
Bath bombs.
Bath bombs.
Oh, like
bath bombs?
And
yeah.
I don't know what the hell was.
It
made it, I had to clean. It wasn't relaxing because I had to clean the tub after.
It stained the tub.
No, I don't use bath bombs. I use a little bit of baby oil in
okay,
the winter
yeah,
because
yeah.
the skin gets
sure.
so dry, and then a little bit of baby shampoo.
Oh, you're delicate like a flower.
No, just your skin gets dry in the winter. I don't put the baby oil in the summer.
Epsom salts.
Mm. No, just a little bit of baby oil and the baby shampoo to make the bubbles.
That's so cute.
Baby shampoo.
And then he texts us.
I use
yeah,
baby shampoo as my shampoo for my beard, my body wash, my dog's bath
what?
Wash. Everything is
oh
baby
my
shampoo.
God.
Baby shampoo.
For your beard?
Yeah, it makes it soft.
I haven't even introduced the show yet. This has been
we're
2 minutes
about,
of talking about Shane in the bath.
I take baths to get away from my dog because she drives me nuts.
That's when he texts.
It's the only place she's not staring at me at all times. Like...
So if you're still listening after a minute and 50 seconds.
Well, good day, folks! And how are you? Coming at ya!
That's his best intro ever.
Wow.
You're listening to the Cave of Solitude comic book and pop culture podcast. I'm your host, Eric Anthony. And you have been listening to the bathtub regimen of our special guest host, stand and state your name.
Shane Aaron.
And everybody's other favorite co-host of the Cave of Solitude.
The one-upper himself.
The one-upper himself.
Martin Sandokan.
There you go. From the fastball special, we are
that
here. Dav J is in the building, but she is sitting this one out because for this episode 105, we are doing a special book club episode where the three of us have all read the classic
Princess Bride.
the classic Warren Ellis and John Cassaday series Planetary, which we are going to delve in detail, and I'm not going to lead the way this time around. It's going to be all Shane the Sheriff Heron.
I don't like this pressure.
And it's not pressure because as we get into it, the listeners will realize the reason me and Martin read this book was from your recommendation.
Yeah.
It was forced.
We were forced to.
Actually,
says,
Martin was forced.
I had
you had a
week,
deadline.
I had 1 week. Let's get into this. I had 1 week to buy it and read it.
You had two weeks. One to buy it, one to read it.
Yeah, but I bought it like near the end.
That's how much you wanted to be on this episode. Which
yeah, we were gonna do it. We were gonna do it.
Tell me what it was, and then.
Well, we were talking about doing a possible Planetary / Authority.
Oh,
that was.
There's no way you would have got through the Authority.
No, I didn't even
chance.
He wanted to do all three of those series, Stormwatch series from Warren.
Well, the Stormwatch series to me is just...
or the Wildstorm. Sorry, Wildstorm.
Yeah,
collect.
Stormwatch to me is just like a prequel of Authority. The Authority is the meat.
So you don't have to read Stormwatch. To read Authority?
No.
So I'm just doing it to be a completist.
It's bonus, though. Like, if you go back and you read
it's worthwhile.
Like, yeah, because you get to see where... Because you don't... Like, when I started reading Authority, I didn't know who Jenny Sparks, Jack Hawksmoor,
Paul Lemonair.
But you don't need to know that. But if you go back to Stormwatch, you get to kind of see some of the beginnings of it. It's great.
Got it. So before we start and get into the meat of this book, let's do a little catch-up with everybody. Shane, you're working on your Kickstarter. Everyone's heard about Morris.
Yeah.
Me and Martin are in it.
Yeah.
When's it coming out? And how big is Martin's sword?
Well, we
that's awfully personal.
He doesn't get a sword. He gets a putter. Isn't that what I agreed on? He's going to carry
he
carries around a putter like Bob
Hope. I think that's more of a vicious weapon if that's what you're choosing to kill people with, a putter. You have
my
to be
version of
ruthless.
Lucille, the putter.
The putter, yeah, something like that.
So how's it coming along?
It's coming along pretty good. It's taking longer than expected because I'm making it look really good. So, I don't know, I was just like, I could like rush it a bit more, but I want it to look as good as possible, so I decided that I'm going to be a little bit later, but it's going to be a bit better of a book.
So you're taking the John Cassaday approach, if you will, making sure it's perfect.
Yeah.
Every
yeah.
panel counts.
Yeah, I'm the John Cassaday of my own book.
Awesome.
The quietly approach, if you will.
Nice. So when do you... What's your goal?
It'll be done in like the next 2 weeks, basically. It's okay. It's almost there.
But it's kind of good. Do you feel pressure?
2 weeks?
I didn't feel... Yeah, in about a couple weeks, yeah. Awesome. Like, I'm almost done. Yeah.
Will it be ready for Toronto Comic Con?
Oh, 100%, yeah.
Or will you be selling... You'll have copies ready to sell there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome.
Well, when is that show?
That's March 17th, 18th?
16th, yeah, 17th, yeah, yeah, around yeah. Yeah, because I'm printing with Alfonso, and he does a pretty quick turnaround. So, yeah, I think, yeah, we should have it. If I get awesome. Him all the files,
so,
yeah.
So issue zero and issue one.
Issue zero, issue one, and then the gallery book with all the pinups and everything like that.
Sweet.
Yeah, it'll be good.
That's exciting.
Yeah, I think so.
So are you looking forward to this Toronto Comic Con a little bit more than ones in the past? Because
actually,
you,
yeah. Yeah, I've gotten pretty jaded with cons, and I'm like, I hate going to them, they're boring. But yeah, I'm excited to have Morris. Like, obviously there's the people who back the Kickstarter that want to like get the book, but... I think it'll, like, I'm curious to see how it sells to other people, because I feel we've been doing Black Hole Hunters Club for, I think it's like 5 years now, and I think Morris is a more marketable book, like looks wise, mm-hmm. premise wise. I feel like it'll sell better, just the pitch and everything. So
right.
I'm curious to see if I'm actually accurate about that, but I think so.
I think so too. I don't know why. There's something about the pitch that you did I was sold on, because it appeals to like so many different genres.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's also just like, I think it's just the look of Morris. I feel like he's got sort of, he's like, you know, one part Monopoly Man, one part like Wilford Brimley.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I want to know more about this gentleman.
Yeah, yeah. I think exactly. like, because yeah. originally it was just a sketch that I did that kind of, you know, I did prints from there and it went on. So I feel like it just, people really respond to the look of him very well. So that's why I ended up actually making a comic of it.
Right.
Because originally I was just going to do like a series of illustrations of him.
Right.
But yeah, it's good. I'm having like so much fun drawing it. I was showing you guys those.
A couple shots, yeah.
Yeah, the panels of like the chase scene towards the end. And it's actually like, and then right now I'm planning with two different writers sort of like lining up future stories. So like once this is done, keep going with it. And I'm just having so much fun putting it together actually.
That's great. Can you tell us who those possible writers are? Or, like, you know who they are, but is it... You want to wait until it's in motion as opposed to...
Yeah, let's wait. I mean, okay. It's not like a super secret, but...
No, but...
I feel like... I don't know. I don't like announcing things that aren't really a thing until they're
right,
a thing.
Right,
you know?
Got it.
Does that make sense? Yeah,
absolutely. Because then people will be like, oh, remember you said you were going to do that, whatever happened.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
got but it. They're two really good writers, and I'm enjoying working with them.
That's good.
Very much.
That's cool. So this... When you, you've got the experience of working on an indie book of your own and seeing everybody else at cons have, like, indie books, do you kind of see, like, I know why no one really, like, why would anybody want to read that? Did that experience kind of help you in your forming a book or a storyline? Like, this is what I think people would be interested in based on seeing people's failures and successes?
Not at all, no. It's, Well, I mean, we have also been doing the Black Hole Hunters Club, so we could be easily one of those people that are like, oh, don't do it that way or whatever, right? But I feel like it just sort of happened organically, in a way, which I like because it feels genuine, you know, where it's, I just really responded to people's response of Morris and the way they like the look of him. And so I just decided to make the book based on that. So, yeah, I feel like it's just been very kind of organic and just going with the flow.
Cool.
Like, it got to the point where I was like, I gotta make a book of Morris, because people love these prints of Morris.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to the spinoff of me and you having...
Right.
Me and Martin having, like, in being in the universe.
I think the fans are ready for this. The world
is
ready.
Too.
It's just like a spinoff, but you guys just play, like, mini-golf the whole time with putters.
We'll be like the Quantum and Woody of the Morris universe.
There you go.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know. We gotta come up with a title for that book, but I think it could happen.
Yeah.
We're in the multiverse, basically.
Yeah, I actually wrote
it.
I kind of already wrote the idea. It's like The first half, you guys, like, take baths together.
Nice.
And then you, like, dry off, dry each other off and stuff. And then you hit the course for the a game of mini golf.
And we just podcast.
You podcast the whole time? Yeah. But you guys got putters. It's very cool.
A podcast.
It's something like that, right?
Yeah, sounds good. I'd probably read it. How about you, Martin? What's been going on with you?
Nothing.
You got a couple.
I think you're saying like that. I don't know.
How's the podcast going?
Podcast is going well. It was a bit on a hiatus.
As was the Cave of Solitude
over the holidays, and then came back strong with the Gotham Central 6th anniversary one.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Ruth again, returning person. He gave a couple of shout outs during that.
Yes, he did. Shout out to Jay Clark.
and then the last one, mm-hmm. Shane came up with the idea to do a Valentine's Spectacular episode.
That was probably a lot of fun.
One of my favorite ones to do ever.
Yeah, that was
because Sue
really
was also
episode.
A part of that as well.
Yeah, I got to meet Sue, and she's also quite the character, and
yeah,
it's pretty fun.
Yeah, yeah.
And
so
we're more romantic.
I think Shane's
than
like
your woman,
trying
right.
to test the water. He's going to come up with his own podcast soon. He's just experimenting on ours.
Why would I?
Why wouldn't he when he has us?
That's true.
He's on every other episode
like,
of
he comes
ours.
Up with all of our ideas.
Yeah.
And
I have two podcasts. So you guys should check
true.
Them out.
We should just put his face on our
and
podcast.
You don't even have to do all
do
the
all
editing
the, yeah.
stuff.
He just shows up and talks,
that's true.
Talks about his baths.
Yeah.
That's good.
Okay, shall we get into this without further ado?
I don't know.
No?
Let's talk about baths. What have you been up to? What since you've been on such a hiatus, what have you been up to?
You know what? It was just sometimes...
like to flip it around on air because he asked me like,
I put
what's your
spot?
Favorite kind of donut? And I asked you and you were like... Thank you for asking. No one ever asked me. So you switch it around.
You know what? I guess the hiatus was just like, at first I wanted to come up with things. I just was, I guess, inspired to have like topics at the time.
Yeah.
And now I got you guys
Mr.
back.
Inspiration.
Now, yeah, you guys inspired me again.
Come
planetary.
On, romance lists.
Yeah.
Right.
Come
and
on
you,
down. Comic lists.
And sometimes you need that sort of synergy because...
Yeah.
Martin got his show back going, and I showed up on an episode of Fastball Special going through the movies that we're looking forward to, and I listened to the episode with you and Sue for the Valentines, and then Mike Ruth, and it's
that
like, you know what?
That was the first one that kicked it off, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, you know what? I got to get the juices flowing again, so I think we're back.
Juices flowing.
That's it. The bath salt's flowing, the juice is flowing, the coffee's pouring.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
Ready.
Ready to go.
Ready.
So Planetary, Warren Ellis, John Cassaday.
So wait, did you guys really read
I really
them just
read
because of
this
me?
Book. I
wait, did you guys really read them just because of me?
It's forced. Yeah.
Okay, so
I've been trying to force Ricky for years, and he won't read
it. He won't read it? I thought he for sure.
Yeah, I think he's just not in a hurry. He's not like anti-planetary.
Okay, so editor's note, if anybody listens to the Fastball Special, there was the episode you guys did for favorite Christmas movies, right?
Allison.
If you guys listen to Fastball Special, I was in the background hanging out, looking through all of your comic book collections you guys were going through your top five list, right? And you had Planetary unwrapped in omnibus form, and I got like this omnibus fetish. I'm always trying to collect them and flip through what people love. Because if someone owns an omnibus, it means like they're a big fan of that, most likely. So I was flipping through it, and you were just singing its praises of...
Yeah, it's like my favorite comic.
Yeah, so when someone who makes comics and has an understanding of the genre says this is my favorite to the point where I bought this in omnibus form as well as single issues, you say, why do you like it so much? And I've heard people talk about Planetary before, and John Cassaday and Warren Ellis are, you know, renowned creators. And you said, remember you saying there's not a wasted panel. That was the thing that stood out. Like, there's nothing in here that is... Everything is purposed, and it's just the easiest read, but nothing is wasted. So I'm like, I should look into this. Reading this book or possibly buying this omnibus. Because you said it wasn't even that expensive of an omnibus, right? You get it on Amazon.
No, it was actually a really good deal.
Yeah, for 27, 30 issues that you get. Because it comes with the bonus material too, right? It's a steal. So I had it in my box, my Amazon cart.
And I'm like,
should I do it? I don't know. And I just ended up buying the first trade, and I was sold on the idea of what this series was about. So yeah, I bought it strictly off of your recommendation.
You should have bought the omnibus.
I should have, but
because I offered to give you my trades, because I bought the single issues, then I bought the trades, and I got the omnibus.
You know what? I put an order in with the LCS, and once I asked the guy to put an order in, I hate saying like order it for me, and then you don't buy it because then he's stuck with it. Mm-hmm. So I said, you know, let me honor the fact that I ordered it from him, but. I did read it off your recommendation. I bought the rest of the series because I enjoyed it. And then we kind of forced Martin. Like, Martin, you got to do it. You got to do it.
Well, Martin seemed like you wanted to do it.
Anyways, yeah, I mean, it's one of those...
We definitely forced him to read it faster.
Yeah, it's one of those titles that everybody talks about. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like a Watchmen kind of... like.
It's better than the Watchmen.
I'm going to say, it's one of those things that everybody... It's on everybody's lips. Right? Yeah. When you have a really deep discussion about comic books with people that love comic books, they bring it up. I got a question. Like, I had no idea what this was about when I picked it up. Did you know?
No, that's what I was going to ask. I go, what was your expectations with this book? Like, when you went into hearing about... Because you said your kind of premise was they are archaeologists.
They're superheroes. Because that's my premise, because that's what was told to me when someone told me to get into it.
But you weren't wrong.
No, but it's more than that. Right. Like, it's... Right. I mean, it's... Yeah, it's like saying Indiana Jones is about archaeology. It is, but it's deeper than that, too.
So what would be, like, your... If someone were to say, what's this book about? What would be your elevator pitch for
The them? Same idea. I still say the same thing, where I'm just like, it's archaeologists, but they uncover superhero archaeology stuff, right?
Yeah.
Because I feel like that's a pretty basic, interesting premise. Like, it worked on me. And obviously it worked on you guys, because that's what I told you, right?
Yeah.
So, but I remember at the same time when it first started, Authority came out. I was super into Authority because of Quiet Lee's art.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I hadn't really discovered Cassidy yet. And I remember someone being like, superhero archaeologists, and thinking like, nah, you know what? Like, that doesn't seem that interesting to me. Like, and then, because you don't know how deep they go into, say, sort of like archaeology or whatever, right? But then I picked up a few issues. I think I've read the first trade of it, which is the first 6 issues.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just so into it, and then I just it just gets better.
The first arc's very strong, like super strong.
See, you seem to like the earlier ones.
I do.
Well, we're going to talk about it, but I think it gets even better towards the end. Like, I think that each issue,
it could be for me because I had no idea what going into it.
Yeah.
So I was happily surprised at the beginning because I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
And then after your first arc, you know exactly what's coming in a way, other than the overarching.
I guess for anyone who doesn't know. It was a series by Warren Ellis and John Cassidy that started in the early 2000s, and it's 27 total single issues. It added up to 4 trades, 6 issue, or one has 7, I guess, in them. And then you get the omnibus, and it's just the whole everything. 27 issues, plus there's 3 or 4 like sort of like backup stories,
single issues,
and
crossovers.
Yeah, crossovers, that type of thing, right? But in it, they have these planetary guides is one of the big things in the book. And if you buy the omnibus, it looks like one of the planetary guides without the dust jacket on. And I'm like, I gotta have that.
Yeah, like I saw some people reviewing the omnibus, and they're like, this without the dust jacket, they're like, I might just put this on my shelf without a dust jacket.
Yeah,
it's pretty neat. Like, it is the planetary guide.
You feel like part of the story. You're like, I have one of the planetary guides.
Yeah, exactly. So everything about you got sometimes the story itself is great, and then sometimes they package it, and it's like, they could have packaged it a bit better. The binding's no good. The quality breaks apart. But they're like, everything about this, the dust jacket, the actual hardcover itself, it's like, you want this.
I'm a big fan of owning, like, I love books, hardcovers or whatnot, that are just, it feels good to hold that book in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like, do you guys have the Ramon Perez Tale of Sand book?
Not yet. I've
been on the one I'm talking about. Like, it's such a nice book that you feel like a better person holding it in your hand. That's what I feel like with the planetary omnibus.
Yeah, that's why I said something like that to Matt Kinn about his Dark Horse hardcovers. Like, the way they feel like this is an important book.
Yeah.
Like, there's something about this that I wouldn't want it not to be.
I like the Hellboy ones like that, too. The, those versions. They're pretty cool, too.
Yeah. So sometimes that presentation makes all the difference. So this book had it all from the sounds of it.
Yeah.
So you said, I read it in trade format after the whole thing's completed.
Yeah.
You read it in single issue.
I started with the first two trades.
Okay.
And then I started buying the single issues after that because the trades weren't ready yet, right? So I started buying like... So I bought them on all forms, basically. But yeah. So after... So basically...
Do you have all 27 issues in single?
No, I have issues 13 to 27. And then before that, I had the trade. So I bought... I have like random lower issues, but like basically that kind of thing.
Okay. So this is the question I had, because me and you both read it. I read it in four trades. You read it in a full omnibus version.
Yep. Yep.
And you read it as you caught up to it. But this came out over 10 years.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is like, when you look at the shipping schedule, they say it's like erratic. That's what it was labeled as, erratic shipping schedule. Because there wasn't like, you couldn't say there's going to be, some image titles, they say, you know, we're going to do six issues, take a break. And we'll come back. This one was kind of like, here's an issue, 4 months, another issue.
Yeah.
The next month, but then you might wait a year for the next one.
Yeah. Well, I think it definitely got, it was more on schedule in the earlier days, but then Cassidy started doing the Astonishing X-Men stuff, which marketably, and he probably got paid more for it.
Right.
Okay.
It's just a more important thing for him to get done on schedule, right? Like, he has to get Joss Whedon's Marvel book on schedule. Whereas this image
book, great book.
Yeah,
it's absolutely great. It's my favorite X-Men stuff, but I think Planetary is overall, like, to me, it's a more important comic book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I had to choose one to read for the rest of my life, I'd be like, see ya, X-Men, like, Planetary, baby.
Right. I get
why he might be late doing Planetary.
Sure. Yeah, because the commitment to that publisher would be like, this has to come out. We've got so much writing on it. So what was it like? Because I'm reading this, and I'm trying to keep in mind the fact, like, I'm reading this now as quick as I'd like to or as slow as I'd like to, and it's completed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm enjoying it at a certain, my own leisure, whereas what was it like reading it with those gaps?
I feel like I really love having the book and reading the whole thing at my, like, going just one issue right into the next, but... There was something really nice about each planet, because each chapter, each single issue, it's usually like got its own theme.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually sort of like an homage to something.
Right.
And they do a cover that's, you know, the covers are all very different. They're very like, so you really didn't know what you were getting each issue.
Right.
So it was very cool to read. Like, when you read the whole thing, it all adds up together and it makes this great story. But each single issue, like, if you were just get one or two of those by themselves, you'd be like, that's a good story.
It could be standalone.
Yeah, they're very, like, just great stories.
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't know. I remember just being really excited just for any sort of new Planetary issue coming out.
Yeah.
And I think, like I told you earlier, I thought it ended at issue 26.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause that's, like, the climactic issue.
Right.
And then it was... Like, 2 years later, I walked into my comic shop and there was an issue 27, like, one left on the shelf, issue 27 of Planetary. And I was like, they're still doing Planetary? And he's like, no, it's the last issue. And I was like, no, it ended already. He was like, no, this is the end. And it's sort of like an epilogue, I guess. But I remember getting that and being like, oh, yes, they forgot about this one part that, like, they build it up. And then you kind of forget about it, and then so it's they kind of recap it at the end in issue 27. And it's so important, so it's crazy that you forget about it.
So, yeah, that's the thing. Like, sometimes I find reading single-issue comics, depending on what the story itself is or how they're telling it, month to month, sometimes I find it hard to remember, like, what happened last time? Like, where am I here? But with something like this, I wonder what it would have been like. But he wrote this in such a way where... If you had never read Planetary before, if you wanted to just pick up issue 13, you probably could and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Like, it's brilliantly laid out that way.
There's very few issues that really only tie into the overarching. There's maybe two issues that really talk about the overarching.
Well, there's definitely like that. They're building, but you don't
need
to...
The last one being one.
Yeah, of course.
right.
Yeah, they're building this overall story, but yeah, I feel like any single issue you read... You'd be like, okay, maybe there's more to this, but this is a good story in itself. It's like a complete little story, right?
So, Martin, I have a question for you because I think me and you could probably relate on this. I feel, as I was going through this the fact that they're trades, right? You always associate trades with that trade tells this story, and then it leads into this story. Like, you, they're story arcs collected within trades.
Yeah.
I felt like I went into this kind of reading it wrong. Because I knew they were single issues, that they all stood alone in a way, but I was trained in that conventional comic book thinking of, like, this all culminates at issue 6, you're going to know why you read all of those other 5. And that doesn't necessarily happen with these trades.
No.
I think a bit more split down the middle, where once issue 12 or 13, I can't remember exactly that turning point, where you kind of start to see the bigger picture, that's
right.
Where it's like, oh, okay, now it gets really good. This is like the second
mm-hmm.
half.
Yes, it changes the whole
yeah.
tempo of...
Which is nice, because at that point, you're invested in the characters.
Yes.
Like
yeah.
before, I don't know who these people are, but I would say it took me maybe 3 issues to understand the cadence of this book.
Yeah.
And then when I got to really enjoy the characters, then they start doing the backstories.
Yeah.
And
yes.
they start throwing the little, you know, points in there, like
mm-hmm.
starting to get memories back and things
yeah.
like that, where, okay, now I want to know more about that.
Yeah. So should we explain how it kind of
yeah.
works, like
maybe,
to start?
Yeah,
yeah.
Let's
so
break it down. So we're gonna spoil this.
Yeah, if you don't, if you turn this off if you want to read it and read it and then listen to the other half.
I even think if you listen to this, I don't know if you spoiled it, if it would even... There's so much in this that you
yeah.
discover on your own.
Although
you
I gotta say, there's discovery.
There is.
No, but we're going
we're
to spoil
it.
The
so
big
piece.
If you're right
pieces.
Now
there's
at
reveals.
The point where you're like, oh, I want to read it. I don't want to turn
big.
It off right now.
And it's worth
go get
it.
The omnibus.
Yeah, get the omnibus on Amazon, or if you got a
and then
comic shop that
come
you
back
deal.
And listen to the rest of this.
Yeah.
So yeah, the first trade is 6 issues, and it starts with they're in a little diner in the desert.
Should we explain like or give the cast of characters?
That's what I was gonna do.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry, my bad. Lead the way, Shane.
Well, it opens with our main protagonist, which is Elijah Snow, but he's all beat up and dirty. He looks like a bum, and he's greeted by Jaquita Wagner. That's her name, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who's sort of I don't know. She how do we describe her? She's almost like Amazonian. Like she's like a very strong. Well, we get to see her powers
I get
later
Black
on,
Widow.
But. Yeah, kind of Black Widow, but she's
kind
more,
of.
She's like Black Widow meets like She-Hulk.
But she's covert.
So.
Right, yeah, yeah. So
she's really strong too, but you don't see
But you don't know the powers until later, but
yeah.
she seems just very like a covert CIA.
Yeah, she's Black Widow with I don't know how fast she is, but is she like Quicksilver type of Flash?
I would
Flash?
Say Quicksilver, yeah.
Not so much Flash.
You see that later on, but yeah, she's got that speed, like
she's
yeah.
got yeah, like there's
yeah.
But it opens with them in a diner and Elijah Snow is this he looks bummy at this point, but he's our main protagonist. And he's, all you really know about him right away is that he's sort of got cold powers that are sort of like unanswered. And he, you know, the girl in the diner complains that the air conditioner always fucks around when he's in there and stuff like that.
He's a curmudgeon.
Yeah. So right away, Jaquita recruits him to be part of this group called Planetary.
Mm-hmm.
And she just tells him, like, we're going to pay you $1 million for the rest of your life, every year for the rest of your life. Regardless of whether you're with us or not, whatever.
Right.
And then you meet the other third guy in the team, the drummer, who's... They don't really describe exactly his powers, but he's into technology.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses these drums to kind of, like, feel the technology.
Right.
And he's kind of like this weirdo. And what in the first issue, their first mission they go on is the... Where they discover... What do they call him in this? Axel Brass?
Yeah.
Bronze.
Which is...
Axel.
Yeah, which he's kind of like... He's your... he's your Doc Savage?
Doc Savage.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, like, it's kind of cool because everything's, like, a tribute
brass,
to,
yeah.
homage to something that it adds up to, like, the whole bigger picture. But, yeah, the first issue, you get to see this, like, sort of old, kind of like, what is the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen? Like, instead of superheroes, they're sort of, like, all these literary characters.
Right.
Yeah.
And then they, like, are, like, pulp heroes that create this sort of Justice
pulp
League.
Pulp heroes, that's a good one. Yeah.
And then they introduce you to the Bleed, which is a running theme throughout all of, like, the Wildstorm, Warren Ellis stuff, where it's...
Oh, so it's through all the other
Yeah,
books.
It's in the Authority as
okay.
well as the
That's
Bleed,
cool.
which is sort of like this weird snowflake thing that opens up endless dimensions, right?
Quick question.
Yeah.
The Bleed, is that referenced in... Does Grant Morrison reference that in the Multiversity, if anyone's read it? I heard he kind of takes that...
I haven't read it, but now that the Wildstorm universe is like part of DC universe now.
Okay.
I imagine they would probably run with that or whatever.
Okay. I thought I heard or read somewhere that that concept is later explored with Multiversity, perhaps.
Probably, because that's like what Grant Morrison likes to do, right?
Right. And
mix
and,
the whole universes together.
And the Bleed is basically like a window to
Yeah, so maybe that's... I haven't read how the Wildstorm universe... And again, I don't like it. We were talking about this earlier. I hate that the Midnighter and all the Wildstorm characters are now part of the DC universe. Because Midnighter was always... Like, he's... Basically, like, Midnighter from Authority is... He's, like, gay Batman, but he's way cooler than Batman. And he's more violent and vicious... And I, like, he's just such a better character to me than Batman. So I'm like, I hate that he's just in the universe now with Batman. I don't know. That bothers me.
Do you think it's because they won't let that character be the way he's present him the way he's supposed to be presented because they're on they're now in DC Comics as opposed to
Not just that, but yeah, obviously Warner Brothers is a huge corporation.
Yeah.
So they actually tried to kill the Authority. In the early 2000s is when they bought Wildstorm. DC bought Wildstorm from Jim Lee.
Right.
And they did everything in their power to sort of get rid of or ruin the Authority. Because I think... my assumption is that they didn't like the idea of... In the Wildstorm universe, their Superman and Batman are gay lovers. And I feel like maybe they just were like, that's ruining or tarnishing our brand or something. I don't know what where that, but it there's a lot of censorship that came on the Authority after, so I feel like that's probably definitely part of it. The fact that
maybe they thought they're poking fun at them, kind of. Like,
I think, and they probably are in a little bit. But let me tell you something: Apollo and Midnight, gay Superman and Batman are way better than Superman and Batman in the DC universe.
Why though?
When you just read their stories, especially what Mark Miller did with them, like Midnighter was sort of programmed. He can sort of analyze and see fights and body language and everything from a million different angles before a punch is thrown.
That was his power, right?
Yeah, and he's just like...
But does the fact that basically gay Superman and Batman are more interesting, is the fact that they're gay or that Midnighter and Apollo are more interesting?
They're more interesting. I like them better as characters. The fact that they're gay just is kind of like, good, you know, fucking... one, it's progressive, right? And it shines a light on, you know, the fact that, like, their identity is not that they're gay superheroes. They're just really awesome characters that happen to be gay lovers, right? Like...
Yeah.
And I'm just like, you know what, they're good. And honestly, I'm tired of Batman and Superman stories. I feel like this is a good way to sort of reinvent them, and I really liked it.
I think the whole point, like, even in Planetary, right, it's a lot of analogs and pastiche to, they don't exactly say this is Superman or this is...
Oh, but it's very clear.
It's clear,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
That's what I mean.
Even
like,
in the...
Even when
the
you
first
were,
issue, they do that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Even the covers, right?
Yeah.
They're, like, we're talking about the Vertigo...
Oh yeah, and I don't think Warren Ellis is trying to be really subtle. It's
no.
very obvious,
no.
like what he's doing.
But it's like Astro City, right? Astro City is a clear pastiche of the DC universe through different characters. Or sometimes you read Invincible from Robert Kirkman, and he's got like his versions of those things. So part of that is, imagine if these characters were like this.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of
or this happened to them.
Instead, everything you know about them except. Alfred
they're
is kind of a
what
woman.
If.
Yeah.
Some of them are kind of what if. Like,
right.
Like,
you take
like that magic and loss issue.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's not exactly what you, but you know who they're supposed to be representing. And I think that's.
The Trinity.
we'll probably talk about Authority later, but.
Yeah, we're gonna do an Authority episode.
Oh my god. The first story arc of Miller and Quitely's Authority, the main villain is Jack Kirby. And they're basically fighting all these weird versions of evil Marvel characters.
Yeah.
Like Captain America's like this super soldier, but also like rapes his victims and stuff like that. It's like, it's terrible, but you're like, well, this is a very interesting take on these things, right?
Well,
and it's
and we see that in Planetary, right? They
does
something very similar with the villains, the main antagonist. So, yeah, I like when they take what everybody recognizes, but flip it from, look at it from this angle. And you kind of even look at the heroes that you're so used to. It's like, are they really heroes?
It's a twisted Elseworld.
Yeah.
For sure.
Well, yeah, so But I think they do it even better in... Well, I guess at this point we haven't gotten there yet, but...
No, you were going through the
villains of Planetary, you learn to find out, are the Fantastic Four, essentially.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then it made me realize that as much as I love Reed Richards and all the Fantastic Four, they're so much cooler as villains. Like, if Reed Richards was a bad guy, I'd probably be reading Marvel right now. But, like, yeah. Like,
there's actually a great run of him as a villain.
Really?
Yeah. One key thing at the beginning, you learn two quick things. The Chakita, is that her name? Chakita.
Chakita Wagon.
The Chakita character, two things. One, she knows a lot about Snow. Or Snow?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, they know everything about
Snow. They know everything about Snow.
You, and the reader, don't know yet.
Is Snow is not an ordinary person. Because he's been around.
Yeah, that's another running theme with the Wildstorm characters. Right. And it goes from, like, Jenny Sparks from The Authority is one of them.
Yeah.
And you'll see, like, is it Doc Brass is one of them in the thing?
But
Chiquita's
father. It sounds like he used willpower. Doc Brass uses willpower to stay alive. Yeah.
But there's a few other ones there. They call them Century Babies. And people that were born on January 1st, 1900. So Jenny Sparks from The Authority, Elijah Snow, and then there's like a bunch of them that are recurring in the thing. That's a running theme in Warren Ellis' Wildstorm thing, is the Century Babies.
Right.
The people that were sort of born to protect the world, and like they were born on that time.
They're like people born with a purpose. Like they had a job, basically.
And that's, like, they don't explain why Elijah Snow has these freezing cold powers, but it's just like that's part of who he is. He's there to sort of like protect the world.
Are these people, would you say, to understand it from maybe someone who's never read this, they're like the anomalies that you kind of hear about when you think of Neo from Matrix, right? Like you're that one anomaly that has a job to do.
Yeah, I guess so.
You broke code kind of thing. Okay.
I think it's kind of a cool thing where it feels almost like a weird exclusive club. But then the more you read into it, there's, like, so many of them that you're, like... Mm-hmm. It's still kind of but it's a bigger group than you think, right?
Like,
but it's kind of cool the way they all tie together. But, yeah, in the first... So the first six issues, you meet Elijah Snow. They recruit him to the team. You meet Chiquita and the drummer, who are part of Planetary, and they're kind of weird, and you're like, "What? Who are these people?" And then you meet... Like, the first issue is when they introduce us to Doc Brass or... he's a tribute to Doc Savage, basically. Mm-hmm. And he has this team of, you'll see all the guys where...
The team is great.
Like the team is good. Society, so, right? So one of them, it's like Hark.
Spider.
Yeah, and then there's... who's this guy? He's like a pilot, but what is he supposed to be?
I've heard people trying to figure out who he is. That Howard Hughes or the Rocketeer?
Oh, yeah, maybe. That's
like an aviator, right?
Yeah, and then this guy's supposed to be like an Edison. I think it is Edison.
It is Edison,
Right? He's like an inventor. And then there's a Tarzan guy.
Yeah.
Who we find out is Chiquita's father.
Yes.
And then there's the guy who's like the shadow, which is Leather, William Leathers.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this cool sort of like pulpy characters as a sort
who
of...
Who is the Lone Ranger character? Was it
Leather? That was the shadow, Leather's father.
Leather's father. That's right. Brett Leather's father.
Yeah, you find
that
story later.
But I think they call him... Yeah, later they call him the Spider. I think because he has that little emblem thing and he's able to...
Yeah, but he's clearly like the shadow.
But he's... Yeah.
Yeah. But then what they end up doing is opening the bleed, and by playing around with the bleed, they accidentally almost destroy another universe. So their Justice League shows up to fight them to save. And like from their point of view, they'd be like Superman and Batman, being like, "They're trying to destroy our universe. So we got to go fight them."
And so they're saying that the Justice League coming through their universe was also getting destroyed, right?
Exactly.
So it's like Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Exactly. Yeah. So they show up, and there's, a Green Lantern, a Flash, an Aquaman, a Martian Manhunter, all those guys. And they basically have a big fight, and they kill the whole team except for they discover, it's like 40 years later, Doc Brass is still there because he's still alive, but he's all crippled and everything, and he's... been waiting out there to protect
it for 40 years. Yeah.
And then what's the second issue? The second issue was pretty fun.
This one really pulled me.
Like, I feel like this
I enjoyed the first one. Then when they went to the second one, which is the Kaiju one.
Yeah.
This one really set the stage for me. And I'm like, okay, this is kind of like the weird X-Files.
Yeah.
Like
that's how definitely they want you to start.
Yeah. So this is like we're going to travel the Earth and we're going to... Yeah, and I love that they went right away to, like, assume Japan.
Yeah.
So So
yeah, and it's basically it's I don't know how deep you want to go into each issue or whatever, but this is basically a throwback to
we'll be here all, yeah, exactly, all night. But we should do a whole show of just planetary. Which 27 episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, that's basically so the second issue is a throwback to all the old the Godzillas, the Mothras, all those characters. And it's on this little weird Japanese island that like Japan and Russia fight over who owns it or something like that.
Right.
That's a cool little story. And then is the next one the John Woo one?
Yes.
The Ghost Cop? The
Ghost Cop.
So they're still in Japan, and then there's a whole story, and it's basically a tribute to a John Woo movie where there's like a ghost cop.
I heard, I watched a video that was kind of discussing this issue. It's just saying the structure of not only the story, but even the way the layout is and how... Not just the pictures, but the bordering of the panels is telling you part of the story. So every time the ghost cop is in it, you can't see it listening to the podcast, but the borders are black outlined. And then when he's...
It almost looks like film strip.
Right.
Right.
When the scene changes and he's no longer part of it, it goes back to white borders.
Yeah.
When he comes back, it's black borders again. So all of these things are being... They're part of the reading experience and affecting how you're supposed to feel about this particular issue, which is not something that, for me, I necessarily pay attention to so much in regards to, oh, they did that on purpose. I know it affects my mood after the fact.
Yeah.
But when you realize, oh, that was done subtle, on purpose, that subtle, it's like, wow, they're really putting something more to it.
And they do that. We're looking at a previous panel again, going back to, there's a whole issue that kind of talks about Vertigo in the 80s, and there are a couple panels that look as if they came right out of those comic books,
right,
in the way that they're structured.
Right.
So it's sort of like panel next to it, exposition, panel next to it, big exposition, and all those comics were similar to that. So when I was reading it, it tweaks little things in your memory on purpose.
Yeah.
And but yeah, you might not recognize it at first, but...
And that's the cool
thing. Those ones I noticed, but some of the ones like that I wouldn't have noticed.
The more you know, like the more well-versed you are in pop culture, or like pulp or even comic books, the more you'll get out of it. But even if you don't know anything about those things, the story still holds up. Like it's a very...
Yeah, it's sort of like a symbiotic thing where if you know about that stuff, it adds to it and you're like, cool, I know that.
Yeah.
But if you don't, it makes you want to go back and go like, I want to watch some Godzilla movies, or I want to watch the John Woo stuff.
Right?
It makes you want to go back and check it out, so...
Yeah, it appeals, regardless what your taste is, something...
Yeah.
It doesn't... If you like comic books or not, this is a good book. Yeah. Like, it's really interesting how they did that. So, you said, Shane, the Fantastic Four are basically the analog for the villains. And they're called... They're literally called the Four.
The Four, yeah.
So, do you want to... give a rundown of the...
I'm just realizing now, like, the Four is very introduced at the last part of the first...
Yeah, issue six, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. Where they go into the Four Tower, which is like, exactly, everyone knows. And they find all this cool stuff in there, and then there's William Leather, who is essentially the Human Torch.
Yeah.
The Human Torch character.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets into an altercation with Elijah Snow and Jaquita,
mm-hmm.
kind of... They end up sort of forfeiting the tower and letting the planetary mine through all that type of stuff. But you get to see, like, oh, yeah, these guys are pretty tough and pretty badass.
Yeah, and you think of Johnny Storm character as being, like, his power is pretty extraordinary, but the change in a person's personality can suddenly make them so much more, like, oh, my goodness, look at what this person can actually do.
Yeah, and at this point, like, I think they introduced, like, they kind of show you a story of, like, the Fantastic Four going into orbit, but mm-hmm. you don't really realize yet that the Fantastic Four is going to be the main villains.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a monster. Actually, I like the way that they sort of, again, it's near the end, but the Reed Richards character, they say that he stretches his mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? That's right. You never see him. Yeah.
Randall Dowling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I even love this, like, when he uses the Human Torches, he looks like a hobo, and he's all disheveled, and he has a big beard, and then he just... uses his flame and, like, burns his beard off himself. I don't know.
Yeah.
I love that. And then you see the Elijah Snow, the classic kick in the nuts. That
Well, even his set of powers, right? Like, how many characters in comics have had... what I don't know how to describe it. Like, they can manipulate freezing.
Yeah.
Right? You got Iceman from X-Men.
Did you ever read the stories where the White Queen takes over Iceman?
No, I heard about it. But yeah, I was just going to say...
And Ice basically... And she does everything way better with those powers.
Oh,
like, he
yeah.
takes over and you really see the power of Iceman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then when finally he gets his body back or his mind back... He's disheveled because he's like, I've had these powers my whole life, and
yeah.
I couldn't do it half as good as
White King
around. She's been on it for 5 minutes,
right?
But it's he realized how you know she figured out all the different ways
yeah.
that she could use the powers and destructive.
Yeah, there's
matter,
even like we were talking about the early Stormwatch. There's a guy there with like ice powers. There's
yeah,
like, there's been a million of them.
And but getting back to that is like when I see how Warren Ellis writes Elijah Snow and I'm like, what's his power? He can freeze stuff? Like
yeah,
it's not like I haven't seen
yeah.
that before in my
yeah,
mind.
Yeah.
And then when I see the way he uses it, I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't just shoot ice out of his hands.
No,
stuff.
I'm like, oh crap.
Or like freeze like what's it that there's the a part where they go into those security guards and he's at the urinal and he
yeah.
freezes the pee stream so that
I was like,
he can't
like,
move.
Yeah, like if he breaks it,
that.
His like dick
yeah.
will break off.
My
basically.
Favorite was Dracula though.
Yeah,
yeah, right. That
he
too.
He freezes
like,
Dracula and
kicks
shatters his crotch. He knows that he's gonna regrow it, but
yeah.
it's gonna be wild.
Yeah, that's like a better take on the kick to the nuts. He freezes him. So the Hulk
yeah.
stuff is in the end of this
oh,
issue
okay.
you're talking about. That's like basically the throwback to the Hulk.
Oh, okay.
Yes, yeah.
Oh, okay.
You weren't paying attention.
I wasn't paying. See, I read it, and I could if that was like bonus, I might have like,
yeah.
ah, whatever. I'll
and
just read the main
the
issue.
Second one?
The second
yeah.
one's there,
let's
yeah.
see, here we go with the second trade. So, yeah, we're not covering in exact detail, but I feel like, I feel like these are pretty good little breaks, like you were saying, for the trades. Because you think of them as like, what? But that one ends with the introduction of the four.
Right.
And then this one opens with the morbid throwback to the Vertigo stuff.
Right.
Like
so that's why I wanted to
awesome.
Say you read it.
Yeah,
you read it in singles.
Right,
he read it with no breaks, and I read it with the breaks. So was there any difference in seeing it in those pieces? Because the last trade is like 10 issues long, whereas the other
one last
ones,
trade is no, it's not 10.
I think it's 9, 8 or 9.
No, because it would have been 6, 6, 6, 7.
This one, I think...
Oh, wait, no, it's 27 issues. Yeah, you're right,
19
yeah.
to 27.
You're right, you're right.
So it's like a 8, 9 issue. It's a little
exactly.
bit heftier.
Like, these panels are very...
Right.
Like, indicative of
yeah.
that era.
Of the Vertigo.
No one can see that. We're
no
on a podcast, but...
That's issue 7, I think, right?
Issue
yeah.
7 opens with they're going to a funeral for essentially John Constantine.
Yeah.
It's a
Constantine.
Yeah.
And
the
they
cover
make the
looks
cover
like
Hellblazer. Yeah.
And Jaquita, apparently, they imply that she was, like, a lover of Constantine.
Right, yeah.
Jack Carter, they call
Jack
him?
Jack Carter,
yeah.
yeah. And it's sort of just, like, a... it's an homage, but it's also a changing of the guard. In
yes.
a way, right? Where, like... So you see Swamp Thing at the funeral, the Doom Patrol, Demon, all those sort of, like, Animal Man, all the Alan Moore...
Coffee guys?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Alan Moore and Grant Morrison Vertigo stuff is sort of, like, shows up. And they're at the funeral for Constantine, which was, I think, at the same time he was writing this, he was writing Hellblazer.
He was writing Hellblazer?
And this, his little, thank you, his little story about Hellblazer, where he traps the guy in the box.
Yeah, yeah.
If you read his Hellblazer run, there's so many cool stories like
that's
that. Right. Where it, so it's like, it's really nice that he's almost telling one of those stories while doing an homage to those stories.
There's a cool scene in that issue, too, where... Essentially, Constantine kills Superman.
Yeah.
Which is, at that time, a big shift in comic books, too, from the capes to, like, the more Vertigo and the independent stuff. And
was
that
a Superman analog, or was that supposed to be Miracle Man? Because
well,
Miracle
I think
Man
he's
was
a
British
yeah,
character.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think he's a tribute to sort of both. And I personally think... The look of him and the language and everything and the way he dies, I feel like he's sort of poking a little bit of fun at the Garth Ennis Hitman, you know, that type of stuff.
Right.
Where, I don't know. And then at the end, you see he Constantine rebrands himself as basically Spider Jerusalem from Transmetropolitan. So he's sort of like in with the old, out with the old, in with the new.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Got it.
It was a big transition episode. It was really cool. It's like an episode. Feels like an episode.
But they're kind of like episodes where pieces all kind of come together, but any point is a kind of good jumping on point in some ways. Now, you're right. I think this should be collected in a way in two ultimate trades. You know, you got you guys want to get to the reveal of when this book kind of changes the tone or the direction that the characters go, because Elijah Snow is basically this nomad in a way.
We didn't mention they talk about so the planetary has, they ask him who's funding all this. Elijah doesn't know.
Who's paying him $1 million a year?
The fourth man.
Right.
And you don't know who this fourth man is. And then they go to, there's another story that starts to involve the four again, and it shows Ambrose Chase, who...
The third man.
Yeah, but he was like... Third man, right. So then Elijah starts to think that he's just replacing Ambrose, right? So mm-hmm. there's still this one fourth man. And then towards the end... Yeah, I guess at the end of... this stuff's so good, too. This, like, throwback to the Steranko stuff. The Nick Fury type stuff.
Right, yeah. There's so much that the more, like you said, the more you know or the more it's pointed out,
I'll say when I first went through it, again, I didn't know what to expect. I lost the overarching story for a bit. And the reason being is because I would read an issue and then I figured, okay, now we're going to have another story. I forgot about it, kind of. Like, I didn't pay attention to all the characters, all their names.
That same thing happened to me.
And then I had to kind of flip back a little bit. Yeah. When about, who was the leather one again?
Yeah.
I had to go back and then, okay.
Yeah.
So a second read through would be definitely worthwhile to get that piece of it, for sure.
There's definitely that good issue where the Trinity of DC, we're laughing at Martin because he counted the Green Lantern basically as the Trinity instead of Batman.
Wow.
It's still funny. But after they basically take the Four Tower, they start, because they're archaeologists, going through all the stuff left there, and then there's three short stories, one about a Superman, a Wonder Woman, and a Green Lantern, a Blue Lantern, basically, mm-hmm. all coming to Earth. But you find that the Four, actually, what they did was just murder them as soon as they got there, so they never really got a chance to become those sort of
heroes.
They
destroyed the threat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's absolutely, it's kind of tragic.
Superman shows up in his little rocket.
As a child.
And Leather, who is Human Torch, basically just, like, burns him alive as a little baby so that he never gets a chance. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It's great.
Yeah.
That's pretty dark. Yeah, that was
the
pretty
stuff
disturbing.
They do
with
the Green Lantern, when they just, like, they shoot him in the face and, like, and he's just dissecting the body and pulling the lantern out of his chest.
There's a lantern in his chest and they pull it out.
Yeah, he's Blue Lantern. Which we were saying, that's a throwback to, they use that lantern again in Stormwatch. You see a Blue Lantern character and that's, like, basically the same thing.
So when you guys were reading those single issues that were all paying homage to certain heroes and characters, but then in a case like where with the DC, not necessarily the Trinity, but three major powered characters who make a huge difference, to just kill them like that, do you think there's some sort of commentary on what Ellis was trying to say, or was it just like, imagine if, or this is how bad the four actually are, like if the Fantastic Four were
villains?
I think
it's all of the above. Yeah, I think he's sort of poking fun at us doing the retelling of, like, the Superman origin over and over mm-hmm. again, and, like, not being creative with it, I guess. So, yeah, I think there's a little bit of everything in there. Like, he's poking fun at it. He's taking a different twist on it.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, showing how bad these villains really... Because there's a scene where, in one of the later issues, where they use basically Thor's hammer... And it opens this other dimension.
Yeah.
And they're
that was disturbing.
Just, yeah, it's crazy. They just think of it as an entire world that was just destroyed, and the four use it to just store all their weapons. And it's just like basically a giant closet for their weapons. And it's so visually cool, right?
Yeah, it was incredible. So you're talking about how Ambrose Chase is the third man. And at the end of that issue, he's talking to the fourth man. When did you guys realize who the fourth man was? Did you know at that point, like,
No, I didn't really realize it until Elijah goes, I know who the fourth man is. That's, like... Because you're starting to see... Elijah's starting to have these, like, sort of breakthroughs and
right.
deja vu right, and stuff yeah. like that, where he's like, why do I know this? Why? And he's becoming more interested than he should be, right? Like,
he starts going to see his own contacts about things as well.
Yeah, exactly. So he doesn't know why he remembers certain things and doesn't remember certain things. And then, so basically at the end of, I think it's issue 12.
That's when I figured it out.
Too. Yeah.
When he says it, when he says it, of course.
Yeah, because my whole time was like, who is it? I was thinking, like, is the fourth man, is it also, like, Randall Dowling, like the Reed Richards character?
I don't know.
Like, I had no idea where they're going.
As soon as he said it, I'm like, well.
I'm also really dumb and I don't figure things out. Like, I never figure, you ever feel like you figured out, like, a riddle? I've never figured out a riddle in my life. You know, like, you know when you watch Batman and then the Riddler's like, blah, 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 here's a riddle. And then Batman just like, yeah, it's a clock, obviously. And then I'm always like, whoa, I would just not.
I'm like that too, but.
I'm so stupid, so I never would have figured out.
I kind of, while I was reading it, I was making assumptions. I'm always one of those people who I'm like, that's what it's going to be. But I never say it out loud because I'm like, I have a feeling, but I don't want to say it if I'm wrong. So I'm reading it and I'm like, I think Elijah Snow is more important than we're being led to believe.
Yeah, absolutely. You're,
right?
You're figuring
the clues
out.
Are there, like from the beginning, like after you read it, of course.
Of course. It's it's like watching The Sixth Sense.
She clearly knows.
Like, yeah.
I mean, the fact that, yes, he's a century baby.
Yeah,
is not enough really to pull this complete stranger.
When he starts questioning too, he's
into,
why did they recruit me? Yeah,
yeah, into basically a secondary world to be historians of these things, right? Like, why him?
Yeah, it was kind of like when he was it John Stone? It's his buddy that's like a James Bond espionage character.
Yeah. That's
Nick
where
Fury.
To see him. Yeah,
right. That was a cool issue because it's just them talking at a bar and him having like. Panel flashbacks, not even full scenes.
Yeah.
When he says, I know who the fourth man is, I'm like, I think I know.
Yeah.
But if this is done in a way where I'm probably wrong.
Yeah.
So even when I was right, it was still like, whoa, I can't believe it. And it turns out, you guys want to spoil it? Who wants to spoil it?
Go ahead. So Elijah basically gets upset and he calls the other planetary members to an office. And this is like when you see the change in him too, where he's no longer just like, a bummy guy that's been recruited, he starts to become like the boss. And then he reveals that he knows who the fourth man is, and it's him.
The whole time.
So what's happened, basically, you realize now, is that the planetary guys were following sort of, they were doing their own thing, but they were following, Elijah Snow's been doing the planetary guys since the 30s or something like that. Because he was born in, 1900.
Right.
So since he was, roughly an adult, he starts, doing this detective archaeology work. And he's doing these planetary guides and the planetary organization. And he's collecting... He's saving data and collecting things for the world. And then he puts together the planetary organization. And he starts to sort of follow and become the antagonist to the four. Or they're the antagonist to him. And he gets too good and too dangerous.
Right.
So the four, basically, or Randall Dowling, the Reed Richards, kidnaps him and puts these... If he agrees to these memory blocks, he won't kill all the planetary guys. So the reason when you find Elijah Snow at the beginning, he was the planetary founder, but he had these memory blocks inserted in his brain. So he's not supposed to be with the planetary people. He's supposed to be, So essentially, kind of it's supposed to be like a lobotomy, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I have a question. And I have an answer for my same question. All right, so when I, at the end, I'm thinking, why didn't they just kill him as opposed to putting these memory blocks?
Because they need him. Oh, sorry, you said...
Do they need him, though? My thought around this is they kill him off, planetary goes on, they eventually reach at their conclusion of who the four is and what they're hiding.
Yeah.
If instead of... killing him off, they basically cripple him, or cripple planetary in a way.
Yeah.
They could control it. Is that what you guys got, or is it... Because I was trying to figure out why don't
they just kill him off. Like, they also have
could've.
Planetary guides, and they like what planetary's doing, but like they said, I think they, Elijah's got a little too good at this game.
Basically. Right, so they cripple that.
And I think it's also Dowling thinks he's way smarter than them, and it's like a game for him, right?
I think it's
I don't think he thinks they're as dangerous as they are.
It's his ego.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's like the Dr. Doom Reed Richards relationship, right? Of if they don't, as much as they hate each other, as they don't have each other, there's no point to their existence because one is always trying to prove the other is smarter. Hmm. Like Dr. Doom's whole purpose, as much as he's the ruler of a country, he's like, I'm smarter than this guy who is ruining my life.
Right.
And once one of them is eliminated, it's almost like this isn't as fun as it used to be.
I mean, I think in a way, yeah, like he does see it as a game, but also I think Planetary serves a purpose for the four.
Exactly.
They follow what they're doing. They want, like, they're looking into stuff they've looked into to get more information and things like
that. They're selling it.
Yeah, exactly.
Essentially, in the end, which is the other big reveal.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's towards the end. We'll
So, okay. You're an artist. You understand perspective and comic sequential art, and you took a class about it. So you guys are both a little bit more intelligent on the subject than I am. When you read issue 12, were there things that you guys appreciated more just on the visuals of it? Which 12 is the one with the reveal where you realize that Elijah Snow is the fourth man. Now, I'll admit, I did. I enjoyed this issue thoroughly, but there I didn't appreciate what John Cassidy did in the artwork.
I mean, I'm just looking at some of the pages right now, just some of the rules, quote unquote.
Yeah,
that's directing the eye with the dark shades and things like that, and the different perspectives that is being used and things like that. But
so yeah, it's I think the reason I like guys like Quietly and Cassidy as and even Brian Hitch, it's shot like it feels like you're watching a movie.
Right.
There's a lot of widescreen stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's very dramatic the way like this whole scene where they're in the dark office with the blinds and the lights strategically diagonally across and pointing your eye in the right direction. And it's supposed to be dark there, right?
And I like the cropping too. Like where they crop the faces and stuff like that, just to get what you need in that panel.
Yeah.
To understand.
Yeah, Cassidy's just a master storyteller, right?
Yeah. See, I a lot of times, I love the story. I love the artwork because of how things naturally look. Like, I love how that guy draws. But then you don't realize in this, what he did, and I cheated. I looked this up, what other people were noticing about it. Everything is in the shading. The way he shades is the whole story.
You draw,
Because while he's explaining to them with each panel, he's got that shadow across him, and as it goes on, the shadow's decreasing as more is revealed.
Yeah, and then there's that scene where he freezes his desk and like smashes it. And then it's very light and optimistic after that.
So, yeah.
Drop the mic.
they said the key scene was this one where she opens the blinds and the light comes into the room now because there's a huge revelation. So the light is that significance of...
Yeah, I also just realized, too, this issue is almost like a nice little synopsis of the whole story where it's like, we said at 12 is that turning point.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like you're in the dark about a lot of stuff before that.
Exactly.
And then after, you understand what's going on and it becomes clear and it...
Mm-hmm.
You're on Elijah Snow's side, obviously, as the protagonist. So it becomes more optimistic and it doesn't look as dire, even though the four are these like very powerful creatures, which we've seen.
Yeah, and like as they come out of the office and she
they're walking to Central Park.
They walk to the park, and then you get to that where now all of this light is shining on him and probably the best reveal on a panel I've ever seen of somebody saying like
I gotta say, his character design is pretty striking too. Like the outfit, the white outfit, and the white hair, like it's very
memorable,
very memorable.
But so simple. You almost dismiss the simplicity, but the complexity of it as well. I was saying it to you when I'm like, something about Cassidy's art where I often criticize artists who are like, okay, yeah, they drew a pretty person, but there's no background. Like in these panels, it's pretty much the same pose, but it. So much story is being told when him and after he says he's the fourth man, just the finger positioning and head, like it's something I don't always appreciate.
Mm-hmm. So I think like they always talked about it with the especially Brian Hitch when he was doing the original Authority stuff, and then he went on to do the Ultimate Avengers, the Ultimates.
Yeah.
And they call it like widescreen comic book storytelling. And it's like you're doing movie shots essentially.
Right.
And that's what Quietly does really well. That's what Cassidy does really well.
Right.
Very simple, but you're just basically using close ups, medium shots, long shots,
right.
Bird's eye view. your basic film school 101 stuff, but then they're taking their artistic talent and putting that, applying that all to it, right? So it's beautiful.
So does it change how, like, for you being an artist, do you read comics differently? Like, do you look at pictures first to see, let me see what the story...
No. Okay. I don't know if other artists, me personally, if it's a good story, I'm so into the story that I, you know, like, obviously I notice the art, but I actually have to go back and on the reread, I go like, oh my God, this is so beautiful.
But that's the note of a good artist, though. And
exactly,
yeah.
Or just a good story altogether, right?
Is that you don't want to notice the way they do it.
Yeah.
They just want you to enjoy the story and follow it.
It's like lettering too, right? They say if you notice it, then
it's
you're not doing your job. Yeah, you're doing a bad job at it. It should all work and flow, which I think this is like such a perfect comic book. It does it perfectly. Yeah. But then I reread it and then I go back and I go like, oh yeah, look at the way he draws this. Look at the way he did that. But it's like any really good book, if I'm reading it and it's really well executed, I don't notice the art in all the details as much as I should.
Okay. I always wonder that because I'm like, the artist is the one who really labors to get this, to put this together. And a lot of times I'm just reading the word bubble. I kind of see the art peripherally in some ways where I'm like, okay, they're standing on top of a building. Now Spider-Man swings. All right. But I don't notice all of the lighting and the perspective and why I feel. And I feel like I'm not doing the artist justice.
Yeah.
I'm just reading...
No,
but
he's doing such a good job. I mean, it's such a...
Take the class.
It's such a good team, right? Like,
it'll change the way you look at it.
And that's why I'm asking you guys.
I don't find it in a bad way.
Okay.
I like...
No, I think that's a perfect example of everyone. Like, everyone... I think Laura Martin is the colorist who did all the Western stuff, and it's like... I don't know who lettered it, but the whole team, from Warren Ellis to the letterer, everyone's doing their job so well that you're so into the story that you're not noticing stuff on first pass, right? Whereas... Okay, since you mentioned Spider-Man, like, say the old Todd McFarlane Spider-Man stuff, right? Like, say what you want about Todd McFarlane, you like him or you don't like him. He even openly admits he wasn't that great of an artist, and he used a lot of stuff to sort of, like, you know, Spawn has a huge cape to cover up the backgrounds because he didn't want to draw a lot of it, right? But there's panels where, like, splash pages of Spider-Man swinging, and I noticed those are the books where I would stop and really look at the details. Because the story wasn't really that good, you know what I mean? So you might as well just stop and look at the pinup and all the webbing detail and stuff like that. But if they were doing such a good story, you probably should be like, skip the splash page. Like, let's get to the meat, the good stuff.
No, would I know it's a tangent, but with that particular McFarlane stuff, would you say it's when he was writing and drawing the book? Or when he was just drawing even amazing, like with Michelini, like during the Venom
time. Like all of that stuff for me is sort of like, it's so dated.
It's like popcorn.
Yeah,
popcorn,
and I mean, it was at the time too, that was geared towards children, right? Like whereas comic books, like something for Planetary, it's not made for kids anymore, right? It's more...
It's a little sophisticated, a little bit
yeah,
more.
And not that a kid couldn't read it,
but
it's not geared towards them, right? It's more advanced.
Yeah, and there's a lot of references that you would appreciate more
than
older reader.
Yeah.
Okay.
This is a comic book reader's comic book.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I think so.
And not just a comic book reader, like comic readers, movie fans.
Yeah.
Like everything.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
So, like,
you'll get more if you're a comic book reader, but
it's hard to tell because they nail it so
you
well.
Could
you're like,
it. Yeah,
is Cassidy the John Woo fan or Warren Ellis the John Woo fan or, you know, who's the big Godzilla, like, Mothra fan?
Right, yeah.
It's all like, they both do it so perfectly executed.
The pulp fan, like there's pulp throughout this whole thing. And
every,
a lot of pulp.
That's
yeah.
the thing. It's like that's why I said before. If you like comics or if you like sci-fi, like this
that's
book
true.
Is, it appeals to every taste of, I guess, just fiction. Because you don't have to necessarily be a geek to like it.
It's very sci-fi.
It is very sci-fi. But then you got like Tarzan, like that Arthur Conan Doyle kind of stuff. Like that's old. Adventure sort of thing. You don't necessarily have to be
a
fanboy to like it or to relate to it.
True. Where's the fourth?
So when the book changes the tone after issue 12, did you prefer the first half more shrouded in a little bit of the mystery, Martin, or did you like it as it went on? Now that you know, like, oh, now this guy, now we really see who Elijah Snow is and what he's like focused on.
I want to say I like the first half better. And it's just, I the overarching story was fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed, like, I wanted to know what was coming next. What was the next homage? What was the next, where are they taking me next?
Mm-hmm.
And I was a little worried after that. It's like, okay, now we're just going to get this story. Which we didn't. We got other
stories. Yeah,
so they're still doing more.
They're still doing more of that.
And that's
right?
Why it still works well, because now you're finding out the big picture.
Right.
But you're seeing how all of those earlier stories that seemed like standalone are tied into it.
Yeah.
And then there's even more, like the Tarzan issue essentially is the origin of Jakita Wagner and her father's basically like the Tarzan character, right?
Yeah.
And then the William Leather, they do an issue. It's one of the best issues too, where it's a throwback to the Lone Ranger.
I love that issue.
And then halfway through, like the Lone Ranger's son is basically becomes like the Shadow.
So cool.
And then his son is William Leather, who becomes the Human Torch of the Fantastic Four. But you find out that he wasn't the biological son of the Shadow character. So he
got skipped over.
And that's how he got talked into being part of the Fantastic Four, because he was cheated out of his birthright. He never had powers, so Reed Richards promises him to give him these powers.
It's so funny how we still refer to them as the Fantastic Four character.
Well, I feel like if I say Randall Dowling,
it's true. Yeah,
but I like Randall Dowling better than I like Reed Richards, to be honest with you.
I think now, based on how this interpretation of the Four was, I'll never look at the Fantastic Four the same. Like, I'll always be like, you know what? Maybe you are the villain, after all. Even though they're presented as the superheroes, the thing is, the Fantastic Four create, or Reed Richards creates all of these things, invents all of these devices, but he kind of hoards them. He doesn't really use it to benefit the Marvel Universe.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Stark...
Yeah, in a way, yeah.
They keep it all to themselves, and they create like a cabal of their own where they're destroying planets.
And they keep people out.
And so... But the
Illuminati.
Whole time we're reading it, like, they're heroes. They got our best interest. But you just flip the perspective and the camera, and you're like, no, they're the villain. And the whole time, we're just being told to believe they're the... And that's exactly what these guys are, right?
Yeah. I've always actually wanted to, and I feel like it would have been not a success in a comic book marketing standpoint, but I always felt like I would have just liked to read a Reed Richards solo book. And it's just Reed Richards going on like solo adventures. Because I honestly thought he was always the most interesting of all the Fantastic Four characters. And there's so much potential you could do with him. And I mean, I don't think you could really sell that well. Like, no one would buy like Stretchy Man by himself, but...
You said you didn't read it or you wouldn't read it, but what you're describing is a lot of Jonathan Hickman. Yeah. Jonathan Hickman did that.
That is
great. Okay, yeah, maybe I should read some of his Fantastic Four.
Especially the start. He actually does the whole...
Actually, no, I didn't read the I read the Avengers Hickman stuff, which was amazing.
The
Illuminati stuff is in there, too.
He does, like, this arc where he starts with Fantastic Four and things that Reed Richards starts doing where there's villains of him in it. Like
Maybe I should read that.
It's really cool. But he takes what he starts there, and it ends at Secret War, and it pays off beautifully.
Is that the Council of Richards? Is that one where they?
Where it's just him and 1,000 versions of him.
Versions, yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And he realizes, like, oh crap, I'm not that great of a person.
Yeah. Oh, I gotta read that.
It's really
because
interesting.
I've always felt like the Fantastic Four just kind of like there's so much potential with Reed Richards, and then the silly stuff with Torch and Ben Grimm fighting over fucking waffle or whatever they do. I don't know. Like, I feel
the Hickman stuff really, like, if you like this...
Well, I never read his Marvel stuff because I wasn't reading Marvel at that point, but I like Hickman's early stuff, like Pax Romana and things like in the Nightly News. So, yeah, maybe I'll actually go back and read that.
Yeah, it kind of put me on Fantastic Four because I always heard, oh, that's so good. I'm like, what's the big deal? So I tried it. I'm like, this is actually... pretty interesting, especially if you've never been a Fantastic Four fan before. But yeah, what you're describing, he did that. What did you think of Elijah Snow's character as he now, you realize, like he becomes a little bit more...
He's amazing.
It's pretty brutal. Yeah,
there's some stuff
he doesn't play.
Because I didn't, like, when they introduce him, he's sort of this, like, lost guy, and there's a reason for it, but I'm always kind of like... It's kind of like I got like a bullshit detector going off, being like, this is not the guy I'm supposed to, like, there's more to this guy. And then you finally see him acting like himself, And he's just such a badass, man. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not scared of anyone.
He's on a mission.
He,
yeah.
And especially he gets, and I wish I remembered expressively what he says, but there's specifically two things that he said his mission was to save them and to kill the four. I think it was to save them and kill four, which in the end he does, essentially.
To kill the four is part and of his mission of saving the world.
The last,
right?
Yeah, and then the last issue, we find out kind of what he means by that last piece.
We should probably fill people in on that too. So you get to find out who this guy Ambrose was. Ambrose was another character who you thought didn't overlap with Elijah Snow.
Right.
Elijah Snow actually hired him, and what was his powers? He could slow down time, and
he could manipulate physics.
Yeah, so he was like the Matrix, but like with those bullets and stuff like that. He would slow down, and he's pretty cool too. But he actually got killed. And so Elijah finds that out, because after he gets his memories back, he realizes that he knows Ambrose, and goes back and... he's sort of like... That adds to his fuel for, like, hating the four. He's got to, like... Because they killed his buddy Ambrose.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, definitely a different... And they even mention it strictly. They don't like what he's become.
Yeah, exactly. Elijah Snow's on this mission to get rid of the four, and he starts getting, like, you get to find out more of what the four's done, and he's getting madder and angrier and doing, like, more extreme things, and, like, Jaquita and Drummer are kind of like, ooh, who is this guy? Like, who did we awaken? He's worse than before, but then you kind of realize, like, why they have to get on his side and, like, where he's coming from.
Yeah.
And it's that scene where they're in, like, the basement, bottom, deep down level of... It's like, is in Brazil? Yeah, the Brazilian
special,
planetary
the
office?
Glasses?
There's
the,
that one, too.
Okay,
that's the flashback, though. Yeah, and then the four tries to basically evaporate the planetary team from space. And they kill off an entire, like, building of people. They don't kill the planetary people. And that's where Jaquita and
Drummer,
like,
I remember that now.
They're like,
okay,
these people are really garbage. Like, we have to do something about it. And they start to get on. Oh, because there's that's one of my favorite. Maybe, you know what? Let's talk about our favorite issues.
Yeah, let's do that.
And then we'll wrap up the end. Does that work?
Sure.
What was your favorite issue? It's so hard for me to pick.
It's hard. The more we talk about it, the more I'm like, oh, yeah, that was awesome. Oh, yeah. For some reason, I really enjoyed when the issue where he goes to Opakre,
is that what they call it?
I'm not sure why. I guess it was because I kind of like the flashback type of setting, and you realize you're learning something about his history that is essential, but you don't exactly know what it is. And I like the lighting in the artwork. I like the monster that he fights.
Yeah.
The Tarzan analog what's his name? Lord Blackstock.
Yeah.
And he's in this world that's almost like a Wakanda.
Yeah.
It feels like.
Yeah.
Where they're like, you know, you're an outsider here. So whatever you do, don't try to have any relationships with these people, because it's not acceptable.
Yeah, it's sort of like Tarzan meets Wakanda.
Kind of, right?
It's like a beautiful
technology, but there's also, yeah.
Yeah, so there was that
savagery.
Sort of piqued my interest, and then to see that he does end up having a love interest, but he's got to leave, and it's kind of like one of those, not unrequited love, but like that thing that never came to fruition. But then a child is born, you wonder, is that his child, that a love child?
Yeah.
Or who does that child turn out to be? And when you find, it's not his biological baby.
No, it's the Tarzan character, Blackstock's. He did breed, which they're not supposed to, with one of the natives.
With Elijah's girlfriend, basically. And it turned out to be Jaquita.
Yeah, and they start to seal the city off to outsiders from then that point on.
Right.
And they leave the baby outside to die. And he takes the baby to the Wagners in Germany, basically. And that's why you find out, one, he saved and essentially adopted Jaquita. And her father was basically like this Tarzan character. That's where her superpowers come from.
Right.
And it's so cool, because it's such a cool story just in itself. And then you're like, oh, this is Jaquita's origin story at the very end.
Yeah, like there's a couple things that are like, oh... And then that story made me say, what else has happened that is essential? Let me go back and see all of these other connecting. And then you're like, oh, Lord, I don't know if Lord Blackstock was part of in the first issue.
Yeah, he is.
He is. So he's you're like, oh, they're showing you all of these guys.
That's the guys earlier on.
Right? Like, okay. Yeah, but it
William
doesn't.
Leather's father like the, was part of that.
Yeah.
Hark, the end
Hark is part. So
like,
you're like.
It's very important.
Yeah. So it made me have to literally take the other trades off and be like, let me go
back.
That's
what I did. I had to do that too.
Yeah.
That's absolutely one of my favorite issues. And like the cover of that one, which book is that in? I think it's in the third one.
I think it's in the third one. I got it here.
The cover? Oh my God, it's so beautiful. There.
This one, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh man.
That is great.
It's great. And it's so cool that, I mean, I don't know if I would have been buying this off of the shelf, how would you, it'd be hard to almost recognize it because the font style of comic books is always the same.
And that's a reason for that, right? Like marketability, they want, basically you want your font to be, recognizable and you want it to be at the top of the book.
Yes.
There's a reason comic books don't put it at the bottom, because when you stack it on the shelves, you can't see the title of it, basically.
Right.
So that's why the Hulk and Superman have that, like, that's unique,
the
recognizable lettering, right?
Yeah. There's I think book three, when you realize that he's the fourth man, many different things, like, there's so many things now that mean more. Even when he goes to visit Ambrose's family.
Oh, yeah.
And you see that that's going to influence his mission. In volume three, or even this one, like the Hark story, just the artwork, like hardly any words
that.
In it, but like you the fight scene
it's beautiful.
It's right out of like Crouching Tiger and Dragon.
Yeah,
it's exactly a throwback.
Is that the one that I took a picture and sent you guys? Or no, I sent you the picture of
the Lone Ranger.
The Lone Ranger,
and you sent
one.
Us one of this too.
This one too. Yeah, I was like,
but
like, this
scene
is amazing.
Where
yeah.
Usually, like, you see
yeah,
awesome fight scenes, and it's like it shows Daredevil or Spider-Man, like, in motion.
Yeah.
But this one, like, she kicks they're fighting on water. She kicks water, and then there's just one panel of the
drops.
The drops of water thrown at a guy that cut him. I'm like,
oh, yeah. It's, yeah. It's
so, like, descriptive.
I just love the two
simple.
Where it's like, they're like, hop, hop. And, like, that's, like, all the noises they're making. As
The
old school, like.
Yep.
Kung Fu movies.
Yeah. No, this was one
and
of
those. And that's like the origin of Anna Hark story, basically.
Yeah.
Yep.
And most of this issue has no dialogue.
Yeah.
But it tells you so much story.
And the coloring is just like, whew, oh my Lord.
Yeah. The mood it sets is incredible. So yeah, this book three, it steps it up a notch. Like the things step it up. But by the time I got to book four, there might have been a couple issues there, like, I went through it again today, and I read a couple of panels. That one with Jacob Green, who is the analog for the Thing.
Yeah,
they kind of set a trap for him.
Yeah, yeah. When he comes out,
because
but not just him. Like with the angels, and then that like asteroid they land on with this giant.
It looks like Galactus.
Yeah, and there's like all these civilizations living on his fingernails.
Cool. This was very cool.
Oh
yeah.
My God,
it's
so great.
It's hard to.
That's a two-parter, actually. That's
the
only two-parter.
That's the one two-parter, right?
Yeah.
So. That was the one where I'm like, oh, this story actually continues.
Yeah, there's like that hive
so
of alien
those
creatures.
Angels, do they ever tell you where they come from? They're obviously an alien species. They call them angels, but they never say where they come from.
They don't say where they come from, and they're just, they're, well, he does, what does he say exactly? There's one point where he's like, they're from an alien civilization, and they're powered by information, and they're sent to record information.
Right, right.
And he says at some point they're going to be called back to wherever they're from.
Mm-hmm.
But in the meantime, they're using them sort of as like cameras
and
space, basically, to record.
And their ship, right, that they use, the drummer trips out over it because he is able to sense any sort of information being shared around him.
His overload.
So he goes like through overload where he feels like he's on drugs.
The ship runs on information.
Yeah.
There's no fuel. The fuel is information.
Such high like.
Yeah, and they build up Jacob Green, who's the Thing.
Yeah.
And you don't see him. Like there's just talk of him, and then no one sees him until like two pages before he's. Well, they actually don't even kill him, I don't think. I don't know if he's destructible, but they've stranded
don't
him.
Don't they blow up the planet that he's on?
They blow up the ship and, like,
oh,
the asteroid that he's on, but...
Oh, okay.
they at some point they say that he's stranded in space, that there's no way for him to get back.
Right.
But, right.
Like, they're not entirely sure if he's been murdered or not. Like, they don't know if that blast killed him.
Right. Because
he's so tough and indestructible. But yeah, he just looks like the most grotesque version of the Thing.
Yeah.
And again, like, to me, that's way cooler than the Ben Grimm Thing. Like, you see him and you're like, oh, Lord. Like, even his eyelids are like shutters of, like, rock over his, like, I don't know.
Do you think that these versions of the character, like, we're always saying that's so much cooler than what they are. But it kind of gives credibility to how cool those characters were originally.
Yeah,
in a way,
absolutely.
Right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
The for Kirby and Lee to come up with that in ways where now we make analogs of them that
of course, yeah,
you
you're
know,
standing on the shoulder of giants always,
yeah.
Right? But I know, I just when I see that Thing character, I'm just like
it does freak you out though. You're like, oh
yeah,
that's a monster.
It's like when I think of Reed Richards, I'm like, these versions are better, but yeah, at the same time it's like, well, that's because this is also a new take on them too.
Yeah,
right? But
yeah.
Like, I don't need to see the Fantastic Four origin story
again.
You know, like, that same image of Fantastic Four 1 with the creature coming out of the ground, and they're all, like, I don't need to see another homage of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah, this is definitely new and fresh for...
The issue following that one, where they get rid of Jacob Green or the Thing analog, what issue is it? 21?
Yeah.
I wasn't excited when I started reading it.
Yeah.
But the way it ends... It's very, like, it's one of those ones that kind of got me, like, just thinking.
Yeah.
About life.
Well, he eventually goes to they call it, like a witch doctor.
Oracle,
like,
or shaman,
oh, okay.
Or,
yeah,
like,
right. Yeah.
She basically drugs him, and the whole issue is a drug trip. But
yes.
You're actually learning so much about what's in his brain and what's going on.
Yeah, or how.
Basically, it's just, you're going on the journey with Elijah to figure out what's happening.
Yeah. And I was rereading through this again through when he gets to that point where he's realizing kind of his role in the world. And there's just certain things that are clearly like metatextual, right? They're meant for you to kind of reflect on. And that's the whole book kind of does that. But this was the one where I'm like, oh, he's got a point to this whole thing. And that was kind of the first time I realized it.
What's your favorite issue?
Yeah.
So my top one favorite issue, I've got 3.
I could easily make a top 5 favorite issues for sure.
There you go.
I have 27. No. okay. All right. So, striking.
Yeah,
what are the striking moments?
What are your favorite issue or issue?
Some of that left me, probably the Trinity one. So Magic and Loss was a big one.
Yeah, that one's great.
Because it's not even about the superheroes. Or potential superheroes that were killed. It's a matter of, like, hope being crushed.
Yeah.
Because every one of those stories, which is essentially a story of a Green Lantern, of a princess, of a Wonder Woman, of a Superman, were all hope.
Yeah.
And how easily things were changed. And especially if you come... from a comic book background, knowing what could become of these characters and realizing that it stopped before it even started.
Yeah.
You realize that, you know, later on the damage that these guys are actually doing.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, and I think that falls into what we talked about earlier, where the issues before 12 are sort of dark and pessimistic.
Yeah.
And
I really like those.
Yeah. No, yeah.
So
but then they definitely become... As you go on this journey with Elijah to kill the Four and save the world,
mm-hmm.
It becomes more optimistic, and the issues are, like, the Opak Ree one is brighter and nice, you know, and it's, like,
mm-hmm.
visually, you know, brighter to look at and optimistic in a way.
The Vertigo one
yeah.
was another one of my favorites for sure. And I think it was the Lone Ranger Shadow one, which is just,
the history
that really
of
pulled
Mother.
Me in. That was fantastic.
It also, that one ends with, because they've got William Leather in custody, the Human Torch,
yeah.
And then he shows a glimpse of Elijah Snow torturing him.
Yes.
And he puts those goggles with
the
spikes
the goggles
on his
the
eyes
spikes.
And just basically, like, blinds him, and you're like, oh, Lord.
So those are my favorite ones, the darkest,
all the
most brutal ones, yeah, I guess.
You know
but
which one I actually did?
There's one that stuck with me, yeah.
23.
What's 23?
The one where you learn about the drummer.
Oh, I love that
one. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was cool.
Did it not harken back a little bit to Stranger Things? Well, like, the experiment?
This is pre-Stranger Things, so...
Right, but...
Stranger Things.
I'm saying... Yes. But I saw Stranger Things first before I saw this.
I also haven't seen Stranger Things.
So it was experimental, right? Yeah. And sort of same idea with the
children.
The children experimented on. The wiki?
Wikipedia.
So you know. Because
everyone talks about Stranger Things, but I don't want to watch it. So I read the Wikipedia so I know what you guys are talking about.
Would you read it?
Have you seen Stranger Things?
I don't want to.
Why?
Because it doesn't interest me.
Are you a hipster?
Yeah, I'm a hipster.
he doesn't have a TV or
Princess
watch
Bride.
You don't even like Princess Bride.
I'm out of here.
Yeah, that's right. Princess Bride is like our kryptonite for Daff.
And Sue. That's the way to torture them. Put them in a room.
I think
Sue submitted.
She's like, I give up.
Well, Daff just leaves the room when you talk to Princess Bride.
Avoidance.
Sue leaves the chat room. Daff leaves the room. Yeah, no, I really like that, because I was always wondering, like, what's this drummer guy about? Like, what's his deal? He's just always there with the sticks. So then you kind of see his origin and that he's rescued by them.
And why was he pulled in?
Yeah, exactly. And then that little thing with Ambrose being rescued by, like, you see the bond at that point.
You get to that point later where you really, like, and Elijah says, I think that's what's cool about this book is, like, there's a lot of thinking, but they also point out the stuff, like, in Clear Day where he goes, like, I'm here to save things. That's what I've realized my purpose is.
Mm-hmm.
He saved Akita. He saved Drummer. He saved, like, the history. You know, he saved the world from being destroyed by the deal that the Four made with those.
Yeah.
I guess that's supposed to be, like, Apocalypse, those guys, or something like that. Like, the other dimension. And then, like,
cool.
He just saves the history, the planetary guides, right? You see all those guides in that room. It's so beautiful.
So, yeah, I guess the big reveal, right?
Wait, Arian, I don't get to talk about my favorite issues?
Oh.
Issues, they're, like, plural, too.
Issues.
Well, we already talked
Chain
about
has
it,
issues.
But... the first issue of the third book is the Sherlock Holmes one.
Oh,
yeah,
great. I love that too.
It's a young...
See, there are moments, right? So issues and moments are different because I thought that was a fantastic moment.
But the whole issue, no? Like, you just start to discover why he gets so good at what he does. So he goes into... It opens with, like, Frankenstein's castle.
Yeah.
And then you get to see the first
glimpse,
like, of his powers where he freezes the floor of those guys.
Yeah.
And then he opens that map and it shows you, and then he goes to... where is it again? What's the street?
It's not
Baker Street.
It's not Raitzen, but it's kind of like the Frankenstein piece.
Yeah, oh yeah.
The detail in there is kind of like it.
Oh yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
These monsters, they're so cool.
Yeah.
And then he finds Sherlock Holmes, and Sherlock Holmes is there. He wants to train and study with Sherlock Holmes,
right.
And Dracula's also there, and that's the part where he freezes Dracula's crotch and kicks it off.
I love that.
It's like stuff like that where I'm like, that's how you would be Dracula. Okay, I get it. It's that simple if you got freezing powers.
Hmm.
No, it was that was a good issue too.
I love it. And then the part where Sherlock Holmes, it's an old Sherlock Holmes because it's the early 1900s, and where he's talking about Dracula, and he's like, he realized like that won't kill him, and he's like, yeah, I figured. He's like, but he won't regrow his lap in a hurry. I got time to saw his head off and all that stuff. So you're like, he's really gonna like fuck with Dracula too. Like,
yeah.
But
he's
basically,
so calm and
nonchalant
about it.
Yeah.
He's sitting
in
his big chair.
And Sherlock Holmes is just impressed that he found him. Let alone, so then he basically you learn that he is trained in like all of his like research and discovery, and basically through Sherlock Holmes he learned from. Like, that's cool. I don't know, were you guys big Sherlock Holmes fans?
Yes.
I love Sherlock Holmes. Yeah.
So basically Elijah Snow is a superior than Batman because he's been trained directly by Sherlock Holmes.
Well, that's so, well, we can talk about that. There's the planetary Batman crossover that
I haven't read that yet.
I should see if I have the single issue because I have the omnibus now. If I still have it, I'll give it to you. Because it was like they did crossovers with the Justice League, the JLA. I think Jerry Ordway did the art, actually.
Yeah, I think you're right.
And then there's the Cassidy did the art for the Batman crossover. And then Phil Jimenez did the Authority Planetary crossover. And I don't love any of the crossovers really, except for the Batman one. The Batman one's really cool because they keep messing with the Bleed, and they're sort of competing with Batman to capture this guy who's messing up the dimensions with the Bleed. But right. while they're sort of fighting, like, you get to see Jaquita fight Batman.
Right.
But they show all the different versions of Batman too. So every time this guy like sneezes or whatever and screws up the Bleed, it'll be like the regular Batman, and then you'll see the, you know, Neil Adams blue gray Batman.
Okay.
And then the next version will be like Adam West, and and he sprays like bat spray and runs away. And so yeah, and then the Dark Knight version shows up. So it's a really cool way of doing it. Hmm. And you can see Cassidy draw Batman, which is pretty awesome.
Different ways. Yeah.
Yeah. There's I think there's even like Batman Beyond in there and stuff like that. So nice. It's pretty cool. It's pretty awesome. That's why you should get the omnibus. So you get the whole
thing. Yeah, I'm debating. It's a space thing. That was the big thing. Omnibuses take up space.
Okay, let me quickly go over the other great issues. The one with the angels and Jacob Green is so good. And then what's the other good stuff? They're all good. There's so many good ones.
So which one's your favorite?
Top five favorites?
Top 27 favorites.
I think the Sherlock Holmes one might be the best one for me. But
it's really neat.
It's so hard to choose. There's so many good ones.
That one.
Did you, while you were reading this, Martin, because me and you kind of read it at the same time, were you expecting a huge culmination to end this? Because I feel, I messaged you, Shane, like, I said, I don't get the ending. Not that I didn't get it, but I'm like, that's the end? Do you know, did you feel the same way?
Martin was saying that he felt like they could keep going with it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. I just feel, I don't know, I get... He had his mission statement. He completed his mission statement, sure, which was kill the guys and save.
Yeah.
Save the world and save Andros.
We had one more thing that he had to do with Ambrose, right?
Right. Yeah, so I guess in that regards, yeah. But I don't know. I just felt that, to me, maybe I expected something different where Planetary was done. Or this, like, closed up. Or something bigger would have happened that would prevent the next issue from happening, because there could be another issue.
Oh, 100% you could go forward with it, but I don't want them to. It's like reading Preacher. At the end, you're like, yeah, you could do more of these characters, but that's the story. And anything else, you're just doing it for the paycheck, and it waters it down in a sense.
Yeah,
I don't want to read any more Planetary other than that. Like that, I'm so
what if he was writing it with Cassidy, because he's doing Wildstorm now. DC has given him his own line where he's just doing, but it has nothing to do with DC Universe.
Sure. So I guess I would read it, but it really depends on whether he's doing it because he has more to say, and there's more he wants to tell in that world, or he did that
with Watchmen, right? Like they did the before Watchmen. I never read the before Watchmen.
Yeah, but
Watchmen.
Alan Moore has nothing to do with that. Like,
right.
Alan Moore does not. Alan Moore was like, there should be no more.
I don't
Watchmen.
Need
that
to,
should be.
I
it.
Don't need three though. So I get where you're coming from with this, right?
Yeah. So in a sense, it would be the same as if DC were to be like, hey, we're doing more Planetary, and Warren Ellis doesn't approve, and he's not involved, and we're just going to tell Elijah Snow is going to be in Batman all of a sudden. You know, like all the time, where you're just like, I don't know, I don't want that. To me, that just waters down the original books. That's all I want. Just like that's what Alan Moore wanted Watchmen to be. Just one story, and that's it. He didn't want it to be adapted to a movie. It's supposed to be just the way it is.
Yeah.
And so, I feel like Planetary doesn't need any. You could do more. I don't want it anymore.
We didn't really say what happens at the end. So issue 26, he eliminates his enemies.
Yeah,
and they win.
Do you guys think that, like, they show how he captures, you know, they get rid of Jacob Green. They show how he captures William Leather. And then, do you think he kills Dowling too easy?
Yes.
Yes.
They build up Dowling so much, and then...
That was kind of why I felt that way.
I didn't find it was clever enough.
Yeah.
It was not clever enough. It should have
been
more
clever. That's
the
thing, is like, I love it, and it makes sense how they did it. It works, but you're like, I don't know, man. Like, Dowling's this monster they've built up, and he seems to have killed him a little
too
easy.
There was no fight back, it almost felt like.
They still use his ego.
Yeah, I guess so.
But,
yeah,
I don't know.
But you
think
he's so smart, like he's got to be smarter than that,
yeah,
right? But I mean, the way they pulled it off, it makes sense. I guess they built it up, so I was expecting a little bit more.
That's kind of my. I'm thinking all of these pieces, everything I've learned, all of these, you know, Jon Snow and the bleed, like it's all gonna come together.
Right.
And you're gonna have this huge reveal that maybe even Elijah Snow is, you know, controlling everything and just
yeah.
playing a prank on everybody. Like I wasn't sure what to expect.
There's also the Otherworlders.
Yeah.
Right? Like they don't really close that piece because they're gonna come back.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got these four.
Oh no, I'm okay with that part. So basically, to explain what we're saying
yeah.
is the reason the Fantastic Four got their powers is they cut through the bleed and they ended up in another planet where it's essentially like
apocalypse. Yeah,
yes.
It's like going to Darkseid.
Yeah, and Randall Dowling made a deal with them.
Right.
They all got their superpowers, but in 50 years, they get to have the Earth.
Right,
right.
And so these guys are going to come collect. And basically, Elijah Snow sends Dowling and Sue's bodies through the bleed and just says, like, the deal's off. Like, screw you guys. Here's your dudes. But even, like, don't they even say the part with, like, Jon Snow? See, they build it up where he's, like...
Jon Snow.
Sorry, not Jon Snow. no, Jon Stone.
Yeah.
Where they're talking about Dowling, and he's, like, yeah, I suspect that, like, anyone that's even come face-to-face to him is Randall Dowling. You know, like, they build him up so much.
Yeah.
That's why when
he
kills him, you're, like,
almost
oh,
like
a little...
his... You said before that his mind stretches to the point
yes.
where he's putting ideas in your
yeah.
head because
yes.
his mind is so powerful. So I'm like, oh, crap.
Right.
Like, what's he going to do? And then when he kind of just disposes of him, I'm like, huh.
It makes sense that he did, but I was just expecting a little bit more.
Yes.
Yeah, like that.
And that's kind of like where I left off when I messaged you. I'm like, is there something I'm missing here?
Oh,
I
thought you were
get?
Confused about the Ambrose stuff.
Well, the whole series ends by... Elijah, for those listening, he brings his buddy Ambrose back
mm-hmm.
in time by creating his time machine. I didn't understand that.
You don't understand that?
I do, but I like once they get into time travel, I'm like, I'm confused.
So basically what it is he like it doesn't end with him killing the four because Elijah says, my purpose is to save things.
Right,
save
right.
the history of the world, save the planet from the deal that the four made, save Jakita, save the drummer. And so Ambrose... got shot and disappeared. So they theorize that he's basically... because he can control time in a sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like he can... so he stopped time.
Slows
so he's
down.
He's stuck into this spot where he died, but he doesn't exist. He's not... like he's... it's a Schrodinger's cat, essentially.
Right?
Like,
right.
Is he there
is
dead?
There?
Is he
if
alive?
You see him or not, yeah.
And then... so they're basically... after they've disposed of the four, they're going through... they're, it's like a year later, and they're going through all this stuff that the four, the information they had... and they're just like the tip of the iceberg. They've like cured cancer and saved, you know, all these, they're making the world a better place
right.
because of it. And they realize like he keeps thinking about Ambrose. They got to save Ambrose. And the drummer, they come across the thing in the Force files where there's this, essentially it's a time machine,
mm-hmm.
but the time machine cannot go back in time from before when the time machine was created.
Right, which makes sense.
So they're going to create this time machine to bring Ambrose back right there, but they can't undo the part where he was shot. So he's stopped, you know, himself from dying, but he's frozen there. So basically they know his injuries, they've prepped him on his injuries, they build this time machine, and it works, and it brings him back to... the moment he died. So they have them, but they have the emergency teams right there to like, but they don't know if they'll still be able to save him or not.
Right, right.
And then basically they save him, right? And then it opens up the bleed and you see all these different versions.
I did like that idea. Like,
I love that idea.
So they, well, the rules in this comic book is
yeah.
that, as you said, you cannot go back in time before the time machine was created because it was never created, sort of thing. That's
yeah.
sort of their rules.
Yeah. It's kind of like, did you see the movie Primer?
No.
It's a really boring but accurate movie about time travel, and it's the same idea where you can't go back in time before the time machine was invented. But yeah, sorry, go on.
But what they were worried about, the risk, was that they basically theorized that if you had a time machine, at what point in time would you go back to?
Yeah.
And everybody would go back to the point in which it was created.
That's the furthest back.
Yeah.
And potentially it could cause a disaster because it would
yes.
be a bazillion people
yeah.
in the future going back to the same time at that same spot.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Which would basically destroy
yeah.
the universe.
That, yeah, that's the
So thing. That was the big risk. I thought that was pretty cool. That
yeah.
part of it.
And
because
then, like,
he's willing to save
yeah.
but also destroy. He's putting
Well, they don't know what's going to happen from this. And the drummer's like, we need more testing. And he's like, we got to do this now. It's been too long. Ambrose has been dead for like 4 years without his family. Miss
this, yeah. All these versions start popping up.
Yeah.
This is the moment.
We want right? to see. Yeah.
Yeah. So everybody starts popping up. And
that was cool.
I love.
I
want to
read it again now.
But
now I feel like reading it all over.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah, it's such a nice ending. And you're right. Like at the end, they have this giant ship. They can cut through the bleed and everything. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, I don't want any more like that. Anything else?
I think that was it for me. Like I think if an end has to be finite.
Yeah.
Where they would have to push super hard to make another issue. But this one, I could think there'd be an issue 28 easily.
100% you could do more with it, but unless Warren Ellis wanted to do it because he had something to say and not just like a paycheck, I don't want to read that. I feel like it ruins it. Mm. Like it's the same thing I always think about because Preacher is my other favorite series, sort of. Like we're like Planet Hero and Preacher are neck and neck, and Garth Ennis was just like, there's no more Preacher after that. Like, that's the story.
Would you want to see a TV or movie version of this?
No.
No? What about you?
You guys probably would, but I don't
want to see it. I don't know. It's hard to say because this is so purposed and it executes everything so well that you'd have to, for me, this is the one time where I'm like, stick to the book, don't deviate.
No, yeah, absolutely.
Right? But then it's like,
but
an episode,
not a movie. I don't think this would never work in a movie.
No.
Because it's too much.
No.
Too much. But as an episodic 27 episodes.
It would be, I think it'd be great.
If it was executed that way.
Yeah.
But you know it won't be.
It won't be. Yeah.
No, and they're going to change certain things because like, the average person won't understand who that is. So instead of it being Doc Savage, we'll make it.
Well, they finally made a Preacher TV show and it's produced by Seth Rogen, who I love.
Yeah, yeah.
And like Preacher, I think it was like 66 issues.
I don't mind it, but it's,
Well, yeah, but I think it was 66 issues. And I was like, they could do one episode. It's one issue. Literally, they could do just follow that format, but they changed so much of it, and then you're like, I don't know, like, fucking Cassidy's jumping out of a plane. Like,
I remember that. Yeah, yeah. I was like, what?
Tulip's got, like they made her black just for representation, just to change things, which is, like, I'm not against it, but it's, like, they're going to start changing things just because they don't translate or movie execs don't get it, you know what I mean?
Right.
Where it's like,
that won't sell.
Like, you could literally just go, like, here's the formula. Follow it to a T. Like, cast everyone exact same.
If they did a good version of it, I guess.
But they won't. That's the thing.
But they won't. You're right. That's
fair. Here's the thing, right? Is the Watchmen, if Watchmen was 12 episodes for each issue, minus, like, I guess the Black Pirate or whatever it is, that comic he's reading within the comic, would it be good? Would it be better than the 2-hour movie or 3-hour movie? If they did it according to the book?
The movie wasn't terrible, but there's so many things that are in Watchmen, the page layout and just the way the pacing or anything, that it just doesn't translate to a movie form. Like, it's meant to be a comic book. That's what and like what we were talking about with the Planetary, with the certain way panels are done and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
There's that thing that just won't translate to a movie, right? You got to appreciate just the book what you have.
Yeah, and the thing with stuff like that, it's almost like you can't deviate from it. So because of that, as the people who've already read it, there's no surprise in it for us. It's not going to have the same effect, really, because you know what to expect. Like, oh, I know that. I know what's happening next, or it should happen next. And if they don't do that, it's going to suck.
Yeah.
So it kind of, so you know when you watch Watchmen, if you've read the book, you know who the bad guy is. You know who all these characters are, but there's no big reveal. So it's different than when you were to say a Marvel adaptation where, oh, they changed that, but that works for the narrative of a 2-hour story. It adds an element.
What I would say is things like the Preacher TV show, that's not for me because I'm going to watch it just, and I'm going to be like, oh, why'd they change that? You know, I'm not gonna enjoy it. But people who've watched Watchmen or Preacher or whatever, if that brings them to the source material
that's
and they discover the books through that, then that's cool.
Sure.
But it's like for me, I just rather read the books.
I'd
rather read Planetary than watch a TV show.
If they ever did this, I would want them to. I would like to keep the overarching beats to this.
Yeah.
Like the origin stories and things. Keep those the same.
Yeah.
But every episode could be a different story in its own, a part of their archaeological And they could potentially do it really well.
Yeah, it could. It would be
right.
The
like the kaiju one is a standalone.
Yeah,
right. You could have multiple standalone.
Yeah.
Stories.
The premise of this is like you said, you can come up with some great stories.
Yeah.
Like it's never ending what you can do with it, especially just the search. People.
But that's
love
what they
that.
Do. With like they Hollywoodize it. They would go like, oh, let's do a throwback to this. Let's do an homage to this.
Mm.
Whereas like. All of these have a purpose, really, and it
and
adds up
that.
To a total
yeah.
sum.
There is that.
They wouldn't
they
pull. They'd never pull it
do.
Off, right? So if they made a TV show of that, I'd watch a few episodes and be like, "I hate that they changed this." Why? But I like reading comic books more than I watch. No, I don't want to read the wiki. I'd rather read a comic book. Like I'd rather read Scott Pilgrim the books than watch the movie.
Okay.
I just for me, I'd rather read the books.
I'm the same. I'd rather
read the books.
I'd rather read the. I'm a comic, like for me, when people go, like we went to Black Panther, like, wow, that was incredible. I can't believe, like that's
that
been in
ago.
The book for 10
of
years.
Course.
You should have read it. Like it's better there.
But then there's a lot of people that are going to enjoy Black Panther that they're not interested in comic books. They're not going to go and watch, like read the comic books ever, but they enjoy it, you know, all the same.
They want to consume it in 2 hours and then onto the next movie or trope.
It's true.
Yeah.
Well, that's our planetary extravaganza. We went 1:50.
Where does it... Did we really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Where does it rank for you guys? For me, it's neck and neck with Preacher as like my all-time favorite.
All-time
favorite?
I think it's my favorite. I think it beats Preacher just a little bit.
I need to read it again. Like, it was... Like, I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I'm glad I got it. I'm glad I got the Omnibus. I'm actually really glad I got the Omnibus because I'm probably going to revisit some of it. I might not read it all again. Really?
Yeah.
I might, but... I'll definitely revisit some of it.
It's
so.
Such a... It fits perfect into an omnibus, too. Like, it's
a
nice, fat book, but it's not, like... There's no... You don't need two or three omnibus to make it all work. It's, like...
It's,
that's
the other
nice.
Thing I like about it, too, because I have, like, the Stan Lee Spider-Man, and I need three to complete it. This is, like... This is it.
And it's a planetary guide.
It's pretty sweet. It's a good...
It's hard to say. Like I need to... I almost have to have this, like, 2 years from now. Because I need to know what sticks. Like, there's certain ones that I thought were the greatest thing ever, and then I go back and it's maybe not the greatest. I am on a planetary high right now because I just read it and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Right? But stuff that sticks in my mind from way back would be, like, Squadron Supreme. Like, maybe it was just, like, I haven't gone back to that
the
book.
The old stuff or
the old
redone?
Stuff.
Okay.
No, the original 12-parter.
Yeah.
Like, to me, when that just really had an impression on me. So, again... Maybe a year from now, I gotta see. I don't know if I can answer that right now, to be honest. But it's very good. I recommend it.
This is, I don't know where I would rank it, just because I've read so much and I like so much. But I have, there's a lot of things that I've read that I really like, but I probably will never read again. This is something that I will always keep on my shelf.
Yeah.
I will always have this planetary set in omnibus and this.
Yeah, if you read it like every year or two.
This is in the Watchmen.
I'll read that. I'll read some Sandman. Like, there's some things that I really enjoy reading.
This is like, if you made me give a top five list favorite comic books of all time, it's like Preacher, Planetary probably number one, Preacher maybe number two.
And a lot of people say that about
Watchmen.
This
I'll read every few years again.
Yeah.
And, like, there's a few.
If I had to. There's a couple books that this will always be on the shelf. And Planetary is one of them. So that's my... I don't know if you can get something higher than that.
Yeah.
I'll never get rid of it. Yeah, it's up there. All right, guys. Thank you for listening, if you're still listening. It's been fun talking about this. I've enjoyed the book more, talking about it with you guys, because you all appreciated something different than I didn't.
Yeah, I like that too, actually.
Yeah.
You guys have your favorite parts aren't the same as mine.
Yeah, and your perspectives too on... artwork and the things that we all like, even the pulp stuff, some of the stuff I don't appreciate, like the kaiju, like you do now, I'll have a different sense of what everyone's into. Thank you guys for listening. You can email us at Shane's favorite email address at caveofsolitude@outlook.com.
nice.
How is that still your email?
That's the only one I made for Cave. Outlook.
I don't know who uses that.
What's the perfect bath recipe again? It's part oil, part...
It's, you take the baby oil.
Yeah.
Are you making fun of me or do you want to build this?
I can't remember.
Take the baby oil and put two squirts.
Two squirts
like,
of baby oil.
About 2 tablespoons if you had to guess.
Okay.
And then you put 1 5-second squirt of a Johnson's baby shampoo.
Do you count it off?
No, but it's about it's about 5 seconds. Yeah, and then you, that's for the bubbles.
Okay.
Yeah.
So bad. So you got bath tips, comic book tips, and be on the lookout if you are in the Toronto area.
Come. Why don't you change your email?
My email's fine.
Yeah, Gmail.
Oh, I'll forget the password.
Make it the same password.
I already don't remember the one for Cave of Solitude.
What's your password now? Tell everyone.
I almost fell for it.
At AOL, what is it? Cave of Solitude at AOL.
What was that that chat thing before? MSN chat?
ICQ?
ICQ.
What's your ICQ number?
Yeah, ICQ number?
Get me up on ICQ.
MySpace.
My MySpace.
Lycos chat?
You can follow us on Facebook, but also if you're in the Toronto area, come to the Toronto Comic Con and you will meet Shane Heron there. Mm-hmm. You will get a copy of Morris, and if you look for the boys dressed in bright yellow, it'll be me and Martin Slam Duncan repping the Fastball Special and Cave of Solitude, respectively. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Tell all your friends about the show and go out and read Planetary. Take care, everybody. You guys want to say goodnight?
Bye.
Good night.
There's no animal that's going to listen to you.
Why not?
That's so long.
You know what? I haven't.
In between the cover of another perfect wonder, and it's so white as snow. Running through the field where all my tracks will be concealed, and there's no. The channels that have broken down. Now you bring it up, I'm gonna ring it up just to hear.